DeMarco Show, the best wrestling program on the planet. On the planet.
You see this shirt? This shirt is a parody of you, because I think you are a parody of wrestling. And guess what? I don't want to be a parody. I want to be the WWE champion, and I want to be WWE champion for one reason and one reason only. And it's not for the fame, it's not for the glory. It's so that everybody knows, and it proves that when I step foot in this ring, there is nobody better than Daniel Bryan.
Because what I've become is a man who has spent the last 12 years wrestling. Sometimes they cheer, sometimes they boo, but I have stood in for a dozen years in front of the most hostile environments, in front of the biggest names this business has to offer. And the difference between you and me is not parody, Jack. Every one of those matches, I did it while I was holding this.
Greg DeMarco Show.
There's a lot of things I like, and I like the Greg DeMarco Show.
Greg DeMarco, I love you.
Really?
This is Leanne Marie, and I just wanted to say that I love Patrick O'Dowd.
We all love Greg DeMarco.
Really?
I like Greg DeMarco.
Sometimes, at night, we spoon.
Anybody got time for that?
No, Greg. No, Greg, I'm serious. I love you.
Don't do it like that, baby.
Patrick, is someone tuckered out? Someone sneaky? You gotta go to bed, huh?
Damn!
We all love Greg DeMarco.
That I love Patrick O'Dowd.
Greg DeMarco, I love you.
Oh, you guys are so adorable.
That's gonna be a soundbite right there.
You're welcome!
You're listening to the Perfect 10, Scarlett Bordeaux, and, that's not sticking off really weird. Oh my god, see, this is what happens when you're trying too hard. That's what happens. That's, I just gotta, third time's a charm. This is the Perfect 10, Scarlett Bordeaux, and you're listening to the Greg DeMarco Show, the only show, the best show, on the web.
Damn.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the Greg DeMarco Show with Patrick O'Dowd and Sue Young. Sue Young, by the way, on location this week. She's back in Austin, Texas, wrestling as we speak for Anarchy Championship Wrestling. She'll call in if she's able. Don't know if she's able, but questionable decision for them to run a show during SummerSlam, but whatever. This, of course, our first show on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio Network, PWP Radio, at PW Powerhouse on the Twitter. Of course, blogtalkradio.com/PWP Radio. Of course, chances are you know that if you're listening. However, for the remainder of August, we will also upload this to the Greg DeMarco page. So if you're listening off the Greg DeMarco page, please note the change. It'll be in a new location. Follow me on Twitter at Greg DeMarco Show for more details. You can even send me an email at gregdemarcolives@gmail.com. We will work it out. Patrick O'Dowd joining us via the Skype. SummerSlam
What's
is in the
going
books.
On, dude? And hopefully those people that are now listening are talking themselves off the ledge.
We'll see. We've already got a decent amount of people in the snake pit. Welcome those of you in the snake
reach.
Pit. I know, a lot of people upset. Some people with I told you so's, and not everyone's mad. There are plenty of people who are happy or accepting of it. We will We'll get a chance, I'm sure, to talk to some people. It'll be a lot of fun. But it's all about the SummerSlam reaction this week on The Greg DeMarco Show. Learned from our past mistakes. Didn't schedule a guest after a pay-per-view because that just never goes well. There was one show after a pay-per-view we never actually talked about the pay-per-view, and that wasn't
yeah.
the pay-per-view with Patrick O'Dowd. So
we totally swerved them.
I know, and then people complain about the fact that we didn't talk about the pay-per-view.
Aw, Puddin.
I don't want that. I don't want that at all. We don't want the people to cry.
Nobody got time for that.
No, ain't nobody got time for that whatsoever. We'll play it.
Anybody got time for that?
Don't care if it's straight or gay. Don't care at all. So we'll probably talk about that. We'll see, because there's going to be plenty of time for all sorts of reaction this week on the Greg DeMarco Show. But Patrick O'Dowd, we're not going to do it alone. We've got two friends in queue. Just so happens to be the same two friends that joined us last time for our SummerSlam predictions, and that is Steve Cook as well as Chad Perry, good friend Chad Perry. So new home. However, I did give them the address. They were able to drive by. They parked on the street. And they'll be coming in here shortly. But this is the Greg DeMarco Show. Exactly. But we get first dibs, Patrick O'Dowd. And first off, I do want to say that I called it perfectly in terms of what was going to happen. So, and I thought it was very well done, too. Orton leaving, turn around, coming back. I knew Triple H was going to do that. I almost tweeted, like, he's still in the ring. Triple H is still in the ring. And I did tweet it ain't over yet. I mean, 15 minutes left when he pinned him. I kind of figured that was going to happen. And I would argue right off the bat, not just because I said it was going to happen, but I would argue right off the bat, it was the right call to make. This is exactly the story they should be telling. It's going to benefit everyone in the long run, including Daniel Bryan, because I stand behind my prediction that he will walk into WrestleMania 30 as a WWE champion, but he didn't walk out of SummerSlam as a WWE champion. That went to Randy Orton, and I'm glad they didn't do it on Raw. They do it on Raw too much, so I'm glad they actually did it on the pay-per-view, because they could have pulled that off on Raw very easily through a rematch or a title defense. Somehow it could have been done, and I'm glad they did it the way they did it, Patrick O'Dowd. We will talk about some other things about SummerSlam, but obviously the big news is Daniel Bryan winning the WWE Championship, Randy Orton cashing in. And I want your reaction just to the finish. We'll talk about the match itself momentarily, but I just want to hear your thoughts about what they did, the angle at the end of the show with Randy Orton leaving as the WWE Champion.
Well, I pretty much agree with what you just said in sort of your introduction there. I was with you. As I was watching the match unfold and people were commenting on Twitter, one of my favorite comments that kept popping up, or one of my favorite tweets that kept popping up, was, I forgot Triple H is even in this match. Oh, my gosh, that's so great. And I'm like, that's not good for those of you who want Daniel Bryan to walk out with the belt. Because if Triple H has done nothing to attract attention to himself, then something bad is about to happen to young Daniel. And and so something bad sure did happen to young Daniel. And, you know, following up to, you know, him just standing back there, staying in the background, sort of doing everything you would expect out of a heel turn.
Especially the moment he started doing the yes fingers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, when I saw Triple H throw the yes fingers up in the air, I was like, this is not ending well for the IWC.
Yeah. Well, it was timed very well to where you could have that, because clearly there were a lot of people who believed this is another instance of the WWE making sure they had plenty of time at the end of a show to turn it off, because there were people like, woo, that's the relief, whatever. And, you know, that just shows how much, in my opinion, how much work went into making sure that this was pulled off well, even if it was something that people were predicting, because it was done in such a way where, you know, you could right up until, you know, you saw Triple H walking up behind him, be like,
yep,
oh, maybe this is it. Maybe this is what they're going to give us the moment and let it go. But nope, they sure didn't. And I'm fine with it. I'm more than okay with it. So I think it is. It's the right direction to go. I think you've got a great story to tell from here on out. And for those of you who hate Orton, he's better in the ring than you all think and give him credit for. And he will work very well with Daniel Bryan. It'll be just fine.
We know they'll work well together. We've seen it. And
we have,
seen it,
but people forget.
To a point where it's still not overdone, in my opinion, because their big blow-off was a garbage match, and it was a great garbage match, very well done. But there's still plenty more they can do with that feud, and we'll probably see it through, you know, the Night of Champions, Battleground, Hell in the Cell. I'm not even sure what order those things are going, but we will see them in that way. I agree with you completely. As like I said, it was well done. The actual, you know, everything in show business and entertainment, timing is huge, and the amount of time that it takes to do something can really determine whether or not it comes off well. That was all timed perfectly. It wasn't too short nor too long. Like, the amount of time they waited was perfect. Had they waited longer, it would have dragged out. If they did it faster, it would have lost some of the impact. It was very well done, and I enjoyed every second of it. So I was glad they did it. I was actually, when Orton was walking away, I was like, well, maybe they're going to save it for Raw. And they turned around and went back, and I was like, nope, this is happening tonight. So I'm very happy that it happened tonight. But Patrick O'Dowd, like I said, we are not going to do this alone. We're going to be joined by the same gentleman who helped us out during the original. And that is, of course, our good friends, Steve Cook and Chad Perry. Let's go ahead and bring them in. And Steve Cook, we'll start with you. What is your initial reaction to what we just saw at the end of SummerSlam?
It's kind of funny because I was doing a fantasy football draft and watching SummerSlam at the same time on the computer because that's how I roll. And I was in there with the Voodoo Penguin, my buddy on my other podcast I do, and we're just like waiting for it. We're like, we saw Brian win, and it's like, okay, waiting for it, waiting for it, waiting for it, because we know it's going to happen. We know that eventually, you know, and Randy Orton comes down. We know he's going to cash in eventually. We think Triple H is going to turn on him. But they kept waiting and waiting and waiting to the point where it's like almost you thought, well, maybe they won't do it tonight. Almost. But then they got you. Then they got you. And it wasn't a surprise. I don't know if people are honestly surprised or if they're just, you know, complaining for sake and complaining. But like we said last week on the show, I thought it might be a red herring because it seems so obvious. But it's the right story to tell. It's not satisfying, but it's not supposed to be satisfying. You're supposed to root for Daniel Bryan against the, you know, against the bastards, Triple H and Randy Orton. I kind of felt bad for Randy on one thing because he didn't get to do a move. He didn't get to his RKO. I kind of felt bad for him on that front because, you know, all they had to do was a pedigree. So I kind of felt bad for Randy there. But other than that, not surprised. You know, it's the right way into the show. It's not satisfying, but it's not supposed to be satisfying. And then you come back and hope you get satisfied later on.
For me, it's satisfying because it's the story that they're telling. But I understand what you're saying, not satisfying, and I'm sure tons of people agree with that. I do want to point out there were two moves that finished tonight's main event. One was the finisher of Triple H. The other was the finisher of John Morrison. Just want to point that out to everybody who's complaining about John Cena stealing other people's finishers. Just want to point that out real quick. Daniel Bryan stole John Morrison's finisher. I don't really believe that, but I just love rubbing that in people's faces. Chad Perry, what was your reaction to what we just saw at the end of SummerSlam?
Unfortunately, we're a boring crew because we pretty much all agree. I think that everything was perfectly executed. They went along. They had a phenomenal match that would have been match of the night on any other card of the year, except for tonight. And the ending was satisfying. I was a little surprised when Brian won because that wasn't a move I anticipated to finish the match. So kind of, but then, you know, I was riding the high. Orton came out. Everything was done perfectly. I was super excited for the pay-per-view tonight, the most I've been for a pay-per-view in a long time. And now I'm really excited for Raw tomorrow night because we have a lot of questions to be answered. So, you know, WWE is all about building towards the next episode and making you buy the next pay-per-view. And they did a hell of a job at finishing this pay-per-view about tonight.
They did a hell of a job making you want to buy the next pay-per-view, but then I don't think anyone, well, I can't say I don't think anyone, but anyone smart shouldn't feel like they wasted their money on this pay-per-view either. Like you said,
no.
It had an amazing, the two matches, the Brock Lesnar CM Punk match, and this was a two-match card for the longest time, and the Daniel Bryan versus John Cena match, both great matches. Again, John Cena keeps having great matches with great opponents, and it can't always be 100% the opponent. Like, John Cena does raise his game to the level of his opponents, and he rises to the occasion. And he has had some great people to work with, and Daniel Bryan is just as much responsible. But this wasn't a one-person match. They definitely worked it well, and I love the fact that they busted out some new things. kudos to John Cena for not going for the AA when he did not have Daniel Bryan in the proper position, because I was so scared.
Yeah.
And that would have ruined the match, but instead he kind of turns into a spinebuster. I was so happy because I was like, oh, my God, please don't do that. Please don't do that. But and he didn't, so I was very, very glad because I was really, really scared when I saw that about to happen.
I dumped him on his head somewhere else.
Oh, yeah, with that weird Styles Clash thing off the top. And I think Daniel Bryan protected himself pretty well. What's that?
It was just weird. It was just so awkward looking. It did make me a little nervous.
It was, yeah. BJ Whitmer thought that was scary.
You know, once you've seen them bust out the Styles Clash as one of the new five moves of Doom? Michelle McCool's not doing anymore, so somebody's got to, right?
Can I just say real quick, there was a lot of move stealing going on the SummerSlam. I don't know if anybody, there was a muscle buster thrown out there earlier in the show. Cody dropped one. Yeah, Bryan Danielson apparently stealing. I'm sorry, Daniel Bryan. Sorry, Greg, didn't mean to mess with that.
Oh, okay.
Stealing John Morrison, and then what's been going on?
It's just, you know, the WWE is the top of the wrestling food chain, and they're not stealing moves when 75% of their audience has never seen those moves. So,
seen the Muscle Buster. He was confused by it. It was very funny.
He was.
Well,
yeah,
Waller's not watching TNA. Come on.
He called it. He was just like, that maneuver. Wow.
And see, that shows that he, in fact, didn't know he was stealing Joe's move, because he would have called it a fisherman buster if he knew what it was, and he did, and so I'm happy about that. But you know, I don't want anyone to take away from the fact that it was a great match between Daniel Bryan and John Cena, and it was well worked. And what I like is the fact that the injured elbow did not factor into the finish. Let's be clear, Daniel Bryan comes out of this match looking pretty damn strong. Hit him clean with the running knee, and it wasn't even like the kind of thing where Cena sort of kind of almost kicked out either. Like, he stayed down flat on the ground for the whole finish. So I was happy about that, and again, it still made Daniel Bryan look very strong. So any counter arguments? Any of you guys think that this was not the right call to make, even though you might have predicted it? That anybody who thinks that they should not have gone in this direction.
No. And I was kind of surprised that Cena got Bryan got the clean win on Cena, too. I mean, I was kind of shocked. I was shocked he got a victory like that, you know? I would have thought there would have been something more nefarious, some other stuff going on, but yeah, it was unexpected when it happened, which kind of surprised me.
Everybody was tweeting, you know, oh, get ready for the McMahon family, like there's going to be tons of shenanigans in this match, and there wasn't. There were no shenanigans in the proper match itself.
Not the match, no.
So, and like Chad said, is, you know, on almost any other card of the year, this would have been match of the night. You know, Brock Lesnar and CM Punk didn't allow them to have that, and that's fine. That's kind of what happens on a lot of big WWE shows. You know, you look at WrestleMania, CM Punk and The Undertaker arguably had the best match of the night. Wasn't the last match of the night. In fact, it kind of sat in the same position that this match did. So that's what they do, and it works for me. So. I'm satisfied. So let's. I don't know, Chad. Did you have a question prepared at all for specifically to the main event of SummerSlam?
Specifically geared towards the main event. I do not yet, actually. I do plan on coming up with a WWE one, throwing it out here before we finish the segment, but not quite ready yet.
No problem at all. I just want to make sure we keep that on there. You just let me know. By the way, if you're listening and you want to chime in with your opinions, you can at 760-888-5749. Of course, if you're watching, if you're listening and you have Blog Talk Radio open and you're on the Skype, just click that little blue S and you can pop in. We are, of course, live on the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio Network, blogtalkradio.com/PWP radio, our new home, and so far, so good. Lots of people in the snake pit, nobody talking. So feel free to chat in the snake pit as well. I promise you, we don't bite. Right now, it's poor Patrick O'Dowd with the lone comment there in the snake pit.
I was greeting Steve Cook. I mean,
I know.
The name's there. I mean, honestly, the nerve of some people.
The nerve. I mean, yeah. I only got...
Well, trust the Reds
I didn't stand until now because I got like 15... Oh, I have a message from the AZN. Oh, my goodness. He sent me a message. Wow, so there are people going on there, you know. Sorry, I was looking at the Twitter machine because you got to go to Twitter to look for all the reactions to these things, you know. Because that's where everything is now, Twitter. That's where you find everything.
I definitely love all the reaction on Twitter, especially right now. People are just going nuts over it, and there's just lots of questions. I just love the people who are so upset. Like, what did you expect? I just can't. I just can't understand. I have one thing I want to ask about,
which it's kind of going off the SummerSlam topic a little bit, but not too much, because the night before they had the WWE 2K14. Question and answer thing with JR and Ric Flair and Stone Cold and Mick Foley and Paul Heyman. Do you guys see that?
No,
I heard about
a little bit of it.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, you guys got to check that out. It's a good time. I mean, there's some stuff going on. Ric Flair was being Ric Flair, and I'm sure JR wasn't, throwing a few back as people were saying he was, but that's some good stuff. Y'all got to check that out. And it's a shame they only made that 75 minutes, too, because you can't have Ric Flair there for just 75 minutes. You got to put a longer time period on that. He will talk for a while, and it'll be fantastic. So I don't know what they're thinking on that note there, but a damn good watch/listen if you guys have time for that. So definitely check that out.
If you don't, just skip to like the 38-minute mark, and he'll be okay.
Yeah, JR does take like 20 minutes to introduce everybody, so you got to get past that. Although JR kind of making fun of the things they want him to say is also pretty funny. Because he's reading notes. He's like, I would never say this. He was having a good time. Good old JR. You can't
good
smile.
Old JR. Yeah, well, he can sort of smile. It just depends. So,
that was now,
of course.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It's okay.
Oh, wow.
It's all right. It's just like, Sue Young was going to force feed you brownies. It's okay.
That's true.
It's all right. And then she felt bad and was going to slap the brownies out of your hand.
There's that.
That's what happens with the diabetes. So we move on from the main event of SummerSlam. I just want to drive one point home, and I hope people understand. This was a good match. This was not a bad match by any stretch, and don't let the Money in the Bank cash in. Lose that on some people. This was a very good match. Both men went very well. And what this is really going to do for us right now, if the rumors are correct, we're going to be without John Cena for a little bit of time. I don't know. Well, he may appear on Raw tomorrow. Maybe they'll do an angle to set up his exit. But it seems like he's going away for elbow surgery. He did wrestle with the big giant elbow pad on his arm. So we're in for a fall, likely with no John Cena. We'll obviously get more information about how long that's going to take. Chad, we'll start with you. What do you think of going at least a few months with no John Cena?
I'm not going to complain about it. I mean, Cena's a great guy, obviously, for everything he does, and I do enjoy him in the ring, but, you know, his character is stale. I'm not saying anything anyone doesn't already know. So seeing Cena go away for a little bit and really actually put the focus on Bryan and Orton, although it'll probably be on McMahon's, but at least in match-wise, they'll actually be main eventing. It won't be like last year when Cena wasn't in the main event title picture, but still main evented every pay-per-view. But it will be interesting to see if he really does go away or if he just kind of lingers around, because you remember, right, after Extreme Rules last year, we were supposed to have a break from Cena too, and he stuck around. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Cena still be a character, and at most, we might just not see him until after Night of Champions. Another thing to remember would be that Survivor Series is in Boston. So it could be like 2008 when they have Cena come back, make the big return in Boston.
Yeah, which would be fine. And I love the surprise Cena returns. Like, I still have a soft spot for when Cena made that Royal Rumble return, when people didn't even think he'd be at WrestleMania. So.
And the New York crowd at first, they go crazy. And then they remember, we're supposed to hate this guy. Now we start booing. It's fantastic.
Let's be honest, though. Deep down inside, I think everyone at least appreciates John Cena a little bit. I think we can put different percentages on it, but I think everybody appreciates it just a little. So, and people will say they don't, And as Patrick O'Dowd, I'm sure you have a great phrase for them, Patrick O'Dowd, because I don't believe them one bit.
No, they're kidding themselves. That's really all they're doing. Like, it's the same thing with people who talk about their disdain for Hulk Hogan as if they have never loved him in the history of ever, or you know, or act like he wasn't that influential into the business. Like, you're kidding yourself. Stop.
You're right. You're exactly right. What I want to do now is if you guys can kind of pick out your favorite aspect of this match, and for me, it's gonna be probably internet and Twitter based. I'll be honest with you, because this match was very polarizing in terms of the reactions that people had to it, and just cracks me up to no end. And this might even just be an opportunity for us to make fun of the bread and butter of the internet a little bit, and that's okay. I'll start to give you guys a moment to think about it. My favorite thing, and Chad Perry was actually part of it, when the moment that Daniel Bryan locks in the STF, I just had this huge smile on my face, and I immediately took to the Twitter, and I was like, you know, I believe my exact tweet was waiting for the requisite STF tweets. And then as soon as I hear refresh, there's a tweet from Chad Perry talking about how Daniel Bryan is showing John Cena how to properly lock in the STF. Chad Perry didn't let me down.
That's right.
And he wasn't the only one. There were tons of those out there. So in terms of the internet, that was one of my favorite things about that match, just the reaction to see, because everyone always loves to see someone show up John Cena. So who wants to go next? This is unplanned, by the way. If you peel back the curtain, no one knew we were doing this, because I came up with it on the fly. So
on the fly booking. That's what we do in WWE these days, right?
We do, exactly. And that's sometimes that's the best. We don't really call it on the fly. We call it ECW style booking.
That's what I do.
Oh, we do. I'll just say this as somebody, I mean, as a guy who saw Daniel Bryan wrestle back in the day in front of 400 fans at the Montgomery County Fairgrounds in Dayton, Ohio, I'm still a guy that just marks out every time I see Daniel Bryan on a major stage, you know, wrestling like the top superstars in the wrestling business. I mean, I went to the Royal Rumble last year, and he was going against the Big Show and Mark Henry in a cage match, and I was just there like, oh, my God, I remember seeing this guy in front of like 20,000 less people. So I still have a tough time getting over that myself and see him going back and forth with that guy. As far as John Cena goes, I'm not a big fan of Cena's character, but in the ring, the guy gets it done. There's no real denying that, I don't think, at this point. So just a damn good time from where I sit, and he actually got the clean victory over the greatest star of this era of wrestling.
Yep, exactly. Patrick O'Dowd.
My internet moment was getting mad at Gabe Sapolsky for tweeting that he had Bryan Danielson versus Dean Ambrose DVD on sale for $10 during Daniel Bryan's match, and I'm just like, what kind of a lame, like, carpet bag snake oil salesman do we have going on that you have to shill your shit during this match?
Gabe's got to make his money though. Come on.
No,
he's
well,
not selling tickets.
Fair enough. But those are the sorts of things that make you look bush league, though.
Those are the sorts of things that make you just go.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
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 You have a vagina.
my favorite moment actually in the match itself happened pretty early. When I really liked the surfboard spot when Cena powers, like, does like a little power back and flips Bryan off of him from the surfboard. I've never really seen anybody do anything like that to get out of that maneuver. And you know, it makes sense with the type of wrestler that Cena is that he'd be able to do that. And it was a nice touch early in the match to get things going, because it was one of those moments where Bryan didn't get to get his shit in.
And I just want to point out that, you know, I'm 100% certain that Daniel Bryan came up with that counter hashtag
sure.
Smarky tweet. I'm just kidding. I'm not 100% certain. I'm going to say John Cena came up with it just to be different than the internet. So,
nice try.
Chad Perry, your favorite internet moment or moment of the main event of SummerSlam?
Just go away from the internet to be a little bit different. I'm going to say the crowd. And I tweeted about it. I think I saw Patrick tweeting about it and some other people too. And the crowd, I mean, SummerSlam has been in LA for the last 5 years, which is somebody who lives 3,500 miles from LA, it pisses me off beyond no end because I'm not flying to LA for SummerSlam. The crowd's never been that great. And tonight, from the moment that the bell rang for Dean Ambrose versus RVD up until the end, the crowd is great. And that includes even during the cool-down match. The crowd was a little – they were into it enough. The only spot where I saw people, you know, be saying they were being disrespectful was during the Divas match. And, well, you know, it's kind of to be expected. But the crowd went crazy for the main event, and they definitely played into it, including when Orton came out and the pop they gave and kind of trying to figure out, kind of like that New York crowd a few years ago in Cena Return, trying to figure out how they're supposed to react to this because they love Brian, but everyone loves to see a good swerve. Even if it's a swerve you see coming, it's still fun to watch.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was definitely fun to watch for me. And I even tweeted, I was like, I'm not happy just because I predicted it. I'm happy because it was the right thing to do, in my opinion. I will put that disclaimer there. It is my opinion. A couple of things that just struck me as odd that they even came to my head during the match. The second Daniel Bryan headbutt, I tweeted this because it's the first thing that came to mind. I tweeted, Hillbilly Jim with the diving headbutt. Like, he looked like a miniature Hillbilly Jim coming off the top rope. And then the other thing, with Daniel Bryan's longer hair, if you shave off his beard, he's essentially Chris Sabin. So we were only like 4 days away from having Chris Sabin as world champion in both promotions, but TNA took that away from us. And Chris Sabin looked by the way.
I must say Daniel Bryan's 5-minute WWE title reign probably got over more than Chris Sabin's TNA title run.
It was booked better.
That's the funny part. The WWE did more in 5 minutes than TNA did in 4 weeks, in 28 days of Chris Sabin's terrible title reign. That you know, time permitting, we'll definitely talk about. Well, we'll talk about it. Patrick Adam might already be in bed sleeping by the time we do, but we will talk about it. So we're gonna wrap a bow around that match. However, feel free to tweet. Feel free to talk to us about it. And, got a reaction in the chat room in the snake pit. Yelling at me for comparing Chris Sabin and Daniel Bryan. Looks only. Jobber 1-2-3. Oh, no. I cannot help but agree. There's some new members of our audience who are not familiar with us, Patrick O'Dowd. So I think.
Yeah, I guess not, yeah.
We need to remind the people of a couple things.
It doesn't matter what you think.
Find them of right now. So let's move on to the second, I don't know, the best match on the card, but probably the second most significant in terms of storytelling, and that was the CM Punk versus Brock Lesnar match. By the way, if you're listening to the show for the first time, we don't do the typical match-by-match pay-per-view recap. We've and Patrick O'Dowd can attest to this. We're just not very good at it.
Like, yeah, really not.
Okay, then this happened, and this happened, and I find it boring, so why would I do it if I find it boring? So if you're looking for that, I apologize, but I promise you, we're gonna hit the high spots, or the highlights. I'm not just plugging highspots.com, I just said it to say it. So we are going to hit the highlights, and I want to move on to the CM Punk versus Brock Lesnar match. Hell of a match, just initial reaction. Steve Cook, let's start with you.
Yeah, it was a darn good match as I expected. Those two guys, Punk's, you know, obviously one of the best in the world as far as wrestling goes, and I thought he would mesh perfectly with Brock Lesnar, and sure enough, he did. And that crazy old Paul Heyman gets involved. They had another disqualification deal going down. Just darn good time all the way around. Brock getting the big win, and I wanted to change my opinion because last week on the show I said that CM Punk should win. But then I watched on Raw, I saw CM Punk get the upper hand at the end of the show. I was like, oh, my God, Brock's going to win that match. And I wish I could change my opinion on that, but I couldn't do it because, you know, you got to stick by your opinions, unfortunately, sometimes. And I end up being on the short end of that stick. But it was a good time, and I figure we'll see some more Brock and CM Punk down the line. If not next month, maybe the month after, who knows? Be a good time.
Yeah, it's definitely set up for a rematch at some point. And if the rumors are true and we're done with Brock till WrestleMania, then maybe we see it again at WrestleMania. The WWE, obviously, Brock Lesnar, I mean, he faced Triple H 3 times. He faced Triple H so many times, I forgot about one of them when I wrote the Wrestling 501. I wrote how he faced him twice, and that was his record. And people were like, whatever. And I'm like, it doesn't change the fact of the point that I was trying to make. But, yeah, I thought Punk – we all picked Punk to win, first of all. Like, in our official predictions, all four of us picked CM Punk. And across the board, we kind of all – and most of the matches, we all sort of picked the same thing. Except for Steve, who picked Damian Sandow and John Cena.
Yeah, that doesn't really get too well. Yeah.
Okay,
I appreciate your goods. It takes a lot of courage to stand up on your own, Steve.
You know, God forbid somebody wants to put over the guy who wins the Money in the Bank briefcase. I mean, God forbid that actually happens.
Cook, he only has about 15 more losses until he can cash in the Money in the Bank now.
Oh, he's doing good. That's usually how it goes. Yes, and where the hell is Cody's mustache, by the way? Where's Cody's mustache go? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, I watched the JBL and Cole show to find out, they said.
I totally missed that direction and will not be following it. I just figured it was because they could only have room in the company for one significant piece of facial hair per segment or per storyline. You've got the beard.
The beard is here.
You can't then have Cody Rhodes focusing on his mustache. Like, can't do it. It's too much.
I'm in support of the mustache only because every single match seemed to have a damn beard in it. Like that's why I like the mustache, because it's different. Like, I'm tired of the beards. It's not that I don't like them. There's too many of them. There's too many guys have it. Like Mick Kern's axle shave is, he's too low on the damn card. I'm glad Wade Barrett shaved his off, because now he's different. Like, everyone's got the big beard going on. So I think it's just overkill for me.
I think the Wyatt family should shave. That'll totally make sense.
See, it makes sense for them to have it. Like,
talk about Total Divas.
No, we can't, actually.
But we can give men hygiene tips. That's how we roll. I do that.
See, Chad Perry wasn't around back when Dolph Ziggler's hair was a topic of conversation on this show.
He did miss that. Yeah.
He's a great fan.
I'm so sad.
Yes, you are. So,
We'll have to bring that back at some point. So we've got my opinion of the CM Punk Brock Lesnar, and we got Steve. Patrick O'Dowd, CM Punk versus Brock Lesnar.
This was the moment where I really started to appreciate the Los Angeles audience. Even though they were great throughout the whole show, you want to talk about something that amplified a great match. It was a terrific, terrific match. It was everything that the build wanted it to be. They did work so well together. But that crowd was coming unglued and popping for everything. I mean, I think Punk could have put Lesnar in an armbar for, 10 minutes, and they probably would have made it seem like it was the most special moment ever. And that's the thing that, when people talk about Match of the Year candidates, the crowd's important, in my opinion. And I really felt that was such an integral part of making that match not just be good, which it was, but actually feel like those moments that you hear a lot of people talk about that made wrestling special in years past. Like, that was the feeling I got. Like, I got chills listening to people go nuts and watching that match.
Yeah, it was a great crowd. It really was a great crowd. And like people said before, it was probably the best Los Angeles crowd really since like WrestleMania 21. And so I was impressed with the crowd, and they really did add to the match. And it wasn't, Joe versus Kobashi where the crowd made the match, but the crowd did exactly what the crowd needed to do. Like, they enhanced the match, like you said, and just made it better.
Do you wonder, like, and this is what, like the fifth year or so that SummerSlam has now become, like, has been home in L.A.? Is that about right? Something like that?
I think it's 3 years, possibly.
Yeah,
maybe four.
It's become the place. Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure Chad's right.
I just got it right first. Thank you.
Actually, Chad said it 10 minutes ago, but that's okay.
No, I didn't hear Chad say it. Chad referred to it. One of the things I think that they really emphasized, too, and one of the goals was this idea of SummerSlam becoming the WrestleMania 2 for the WWE. The crowd kind of reflects that because it morphs into a different crowd. This is the first time I heard them really highlight sort of the international nature of the crowd and people, fans from all over. And I think maybe the fan is changing a little bit for SummerSlam than what's happened in years past.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it is becoming sort of that WrestleMania type crowd. They have the whole access experience now, which yep. I think they've had for at least 2 years.
Sure.
Maybe Chad knows that too. I don't know. He seems to know a lot.
He does.
Which is fine. That's why he's on the show. So one day we'll tell the story about how Chad Perry came to be on this program. It's actually a lot of fun and kind of random, but that's what we do best. But for me, it really is kind of the WrestleMania of the summer. Plus, they can't do WrestleMania in its current form in L.A. And yeah. L.A. is obviously a right. very important market for the WWE because they don't have a football stadium.
Not until they build that football stadium for that NFL team, they're going to get one of these days.
I mean, they could have it in the L.A. Coliseum, but I think Vince McMahon is just allergic to the L.A. Coliseum because of what happened with WrestleMania 7. I think
Those damn terrorists are going to bomb the L.A. Memorial Coliseum. That's why they had to move the damn show to the L.A. Sports Arena. That's what happened.
It'd be the return of Muhammad Hassan.
Yeah.
Right. Who now is 175 pounds? If you ever see a recent picture of him, I don't think he's gonna be wrestling again. I'm sure.
I love that gimmick.
I did too.
Now, or is he doing comic books?
I think both. Regardless, that's why SummerSlam continues to be in Los Angeles, because they can't have WrestleMania there at this point. So I'm sure Vince McMahon is probably behind the scenes pressuring the NFL owners, put a damn football team in L.A. so I can have WrestleMania there. As soon as they have it in Cowboy Stadium, they're going to go to L.A. if they can, just because they would love to have it out there. And it would be a great place for it as well. But yeah, no, the crowd definitely was perfect for that match, and just a great LA crowd in general. Chad, did we get your opinion on the Brock Lesnar CM Punk match?
Did we or can we?
Can we?
Can we?
Well,
we can.
Give me a question with a question, so I'm glad. So yeah, give us your opinion.
My opinion, same as everyone else. It was terrific, and it just goes to show how great CM Punk is. I mean, obviously, some of it was definitely Brock Lesnar. This is a match that I've been highly anticipating for a while, hoping we'd get it. And, you know, I look back at the last, say, 2 years of WWE pay-per-views and Match of the Nights and the best matches, so many of them would be CM Punk matches. And, you know, it's amazing the chemistry Punk has with everybody. And different versatile matches. Like I said on Twitter, I think this is the best matches that he's had since his street fight with Jericho last year, which is definitely a match where the crowd made it. We're talking about matches with great crowds. And, you know, Jericho and Brock Lesnar are nowhere near alike. Both matches were no holds barred, basically. But the men are very different and put on great matches. I'm definitely intrigued to see where things go. And I actually have a quick odds maker question for everybody if they wanted to proceed with that, Greg, about this match.
Yeah, we're free form today on the Greg DeMarco Show. Go for it.
All right. What are the odds that we see a Team Punk versus Team Heyman match at Survivor Series? And Greg,
that's a good one.
First.
The odds I will see Team Heyman versus Team Punk, I'm going to go, I'm trying to think of the best number. I'm in the positive side, I'll tell you that. I guess all of them. I'm on the positive side of 50%. I'm going to go with 67%, so two-thirds, sure that we'll see a Team Punk versus Team Heyman match at SummerSlam. Main reason why, because, let's be honest, Paul Heyman is a gold, essentially. And there's no bad reason to put somebody with Paul Heyman. And they could very easily put some new guys in alongside Curtis Axel. Or they can play on the past history with Paul Heyman and the Shield and go with Curtis Axel and the Shield, maybe add a fifth person if they're doing the 5-on-5 thing. who knows? It'd be very easy to put a team together with CM Punk, which could also bring in some new talent or could just utilize some existing talent. And it just continues the story, and it doesn't require Brock Lesnar to be there to continue the story, which I think is a key element, because CM Punk and Paul Heyman should continue to work together because it just is going very well, and there's no reason for them not to. So I'm going to say 67% that we will see Team Punk versus Team Heyman at Survivor Series.
All right. What about you, Steve?
I think I'd go just below that because I'm not sure they'd know how to book more than one Survivor Series match per year. It's kind of a tough thing for them to do, so I'd probably go like 47%, something like that, although I would like to see it. And I'll throw this out there as far as people on Team Punk go. Were they to turn a certain person that's been in the news a lot lately, try to make him a positive figure in sports entertainment, CM Punk was Darren Young's pro on NXT.
Ooh,
so there's a connection there from back in the past. Maybe you had the primetime players on Team Punk. I'm not sure if that's
happening.
I'm just throwing that out there.
You need plenty of people, so why not turn them both? I think that's a great idea, Steve.
And with the Shield being tag team champions, and not sure if the Usos are still in the picture, but I mean the primetime players, no problem with turning them face. In my opinion, they're plenty of entertaining folks in my book.
Yep.
That's why Steve Cook's on the program, people. That's why Steve Cook's on the program today.
Because I just make shit up and throw it against the wall and see what sticks.
That
should be a booker, for God's sakes.
You have a better system than TNA does.
Oh, God. Oh, boy.
Right.
Yeah, he's...
Patrick.
Yeah, I guess I'm a lot more sour on the possibility of a Survivor Series match, happening than everybody else. I was going to even off Greg's 67, give us an even 100 with my 33% chance that it's going to happen. I don't know. I think sure, it's possible. Does the WWE really put that much stock in the Survivor Series match? Not really. And so I don't know that the few that they've got going right now, that a Survivor Series match, which, between a Team Punk and a Team Heyman, necessarily makes a lot of sense to me at this point. Now, November's not that far away, so my mind could be changed. I do, hearing Greg and Steve talk, I do see possibility with some people that you could move forward. But then I've never looked back on a wrestler's career and been like, you know what, that time they worked that match at Survivor Series, in the traditional Survivor Series match with 9 other guys, that's what made them. I just have never been there. So.
Yeah. I think it's a good concept, but like Patrick said, it's 3 months away, which doesn't seem like so far, but it is a long ways out in terms of WWE booking. 3 months ago, we didn't really see the Punk versus Lesnar program starting to where it is now. So, I personally think that if we are going to get more Punk versus Lesnar, which seems very likely, I feel like it's not going to happen at WrestleMania. I feel like that's not a match they're going to want to book for Mania. They're going to go with Brock Taker or Brock Rock, either one. So, I feel like this 5-year series match could be a good way to get Punk a win back by putting Lesnar in the match and basically just having everybody on Punk's team just beat the holy hell out of Lesnar. And the big issue, though, would be who you put on Punk's team. It's easy to make Heyman's team, like you guys did earlier. Even putting the primetime players, the Usos, there's just not a ton of great baby faces to go against the Shield, Brock Lesnar, and, Curtis Axel.
Curtis
Axel.
That guy.
Poor guy. So I'm going to go a little bit above Patrick, but I'm not too optimistic. I'm going to go at 35%. And hell, even if it does get booked, there's still a chance it could get canceled, like last year's Survivor Series match. Which was booked with CM Punk as a captain, which got canceled, which ended up leading to the debut of The Shield. So overall, though, the four of us give out a 45.5% chance that we will have Team Heyman versus Team Punk at Survivor Series.
I forgot how bad the booking was for last year's Survivor Series until you brought that up. It was terribly done. It was TNA style execution on that for the WWE.
I'm trying to remember it myself. I can't even think.
The gloves are off, by the way.
I don't even
for those of you listening, when it comes to me and TNA right now, gloves are off. That's all I'm saying.
Greg's such a sad panda.
I'm not sad at all. I'm very happy that I feel this way. It makes for better radio. It makes for better radio when I feel like this about a company like TNA. So
I haven't had to talk you off a ledge in a long time, though, over stuff.
I'm not even on a ledge. This is more fun.
I gotta talk you down a little bit. How's that? Kind of talk you down.
Are you in my bed where they're like persona non grata? Is that where you are with them, pretty much?
No, Dixie Carter. Dixie Carter can eat a fat one. I hate Dixie Carter with a passion now. She just continues to do stupid things, and TNA continues to do things to make her look stupid, like have her publicly display her support for Kurt Angle for going to rehab when she fired the guy who broke his neck. So there's, if you go back to Twitter, I had a field day when Brooke Hogan was released. That's all I'm going to say. I had lots of fun with that one. Plenty of, what'd she do, break her neck tweets came out of me that day. So,
she didn't get released. She just wanted to go home. That's what that was. She wasn't going to do anything there. She's like, well, I'm going to go home and get married. I'll have a kid. That's what she's doing. So that's a big story. Wasn't really a big story.
I was waiting for the reports that she asked for her release, and surprisingly, they didn't come. So
Cares. So they're not researching it because they don't care.
It's true.
Nobody told her she was too big for television, right?
Like no one for TV. That did not happen.
She's a tall girl, but I don't know about all that.
Her chin alone. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, you're right about
looks
that.
Looks like a man, baby.
If you are new to the
father.
Program, what was that?
I said she looks just like her father, unfortunately.
Oh, my.
She does just like her
she
father.
She does have those large pectoral muscles.
She does, except hers aren't real. So if you're new to the program, that was a little game we call Oddsmakers. We'll do a Chad Perry every few weeks where we come up with the odds. If it sounds eerily familiar to something else, it's supposed to, and that's okay. That's what makes it fun. So, Chad, and you might get another example of another game. I don't know when Chad's going to throw them out, so Chad just throws them out, and they're fun, and we do them because that's what we're supposed to do. So, a little something that got some reaction with SummerSlam was Damian Sandow, of course, holding a Money in the Bank briefcase, losing clean to Cody Rhodes, and of course becoming just another guy in the long line of guys who wins the Money in the Bank briefcase and then just jobs out. Daniel Bryan did it, Dolph Ziggler did it, and now we're doing it with Damian Sandow. Chad, we'll start with you. Any thoughts on the loss suffered by Damian Sandow, and of course the match itself? It was not a long match, typical pay-per-view undercard match for WWE in all honesty.
Yeah, I mean, I think the match was on the shorter end. I would like to get a few more minutes, but there's nothing later on in the card that I would have taken time away from. Even the Divas match was passable. I mean, obviously taking time away from that and making Cody Damian 10 minutes would be great. But on SmackDown the next few weeks, we'll probably get a rematch. It'll go 2 segments, so it'll be okay.
Right.
I thought the match, I mean, it was fine. It was a good match. They kept a good pace up, and both guys worked well together. I'm more and more sold on Cody Rhodes when I see matches like this. I've always been a big Cody supporter, but seeing matches like this just make me a little bit frustrated or more anticipating Cody's final rise up the card to get that mid-card World Heavyweight title shot at some point. I really don't have too much to say, though, about it. I'm ready to go on Bash TNA and talk about Ring of Honor at this point. So
We will. Don't you worry. That'll be next, I promise. Steve Cook, what were your thoughts on the Damian Sandow, Cody Rhodes match and, of course, the result?
Well, I talked last week about how I would like to put over the guy that has the Money in the Bank briefcase. And like you said, they don't seem to do that very often. In fact, the last two guys had the SmackDown Money in the Bank briefcase, Daniel Bryan, Dolph Ziggler. They both jobbed and jobbed and jobbed forever and ever. and it didn't really work out. It worked out well for Daniel Bryan. Bryan kind of overcame it. Ziggler's still kind of working on it because, I don't know, his title run wasn't really good, and he's just kind of working his way back up right now. So it depends on the guy. Some guys can get over it, but not everybody's Daniel Bryan. Not everybody can overcome, you know, shitastic booking. They can't overcome being made to look like pieces of crap for months and months and months. We'll see what happens with Sandow. He's been losing a lot of matches lately. It's, I don't know if you pushed the panic button just yet, but you're probably getting close. And I hate to say that because I'm a huge Cody Rhodes fan. I love the guy, so I'm fine with him winning matches. So I wasn't really complaining too much about that aspect, but still, like, man, you're making that briefcase where it look like a piece of crap. And I still want to know where Cody's damn mustache is. That's still something that bothers me.
Yeah, well, apparently if you watch the JBL and Cole show, we'll
find
out. I
don't
want
to watch the YouTube. Come on. I pay, you know, us people paid $55 to watch this show. Come on. Tell these people what happened.
They need answers. People need answers. Patrick O'Dowd,
right.
Opinions on Sandow loss.
I mean, I'm kind of with Cook. I think it's a little early yet to say that he's being completely submarined. I was actually trying to do a little bit of research just to see how much Damian Sandow has won or lost lately. I know he's been on a rough patch on Raw, but I also think that on SmackDown, but if you also look at who he's been up against, like he wrestled Orton. He's not going over Orton. Like, you know,
well,
he's not going over Orton.
Dude, that's
yeah.
the thing.
Yeah, like, well, that's the other thing is, but he didn't look awful losing to Orton, and that was where I was going. But, and so I'm not quite ready to jettison. The second you knew that it wasn't over the briefcase, Cody's chances of winning jumped way up because it made sense in that regard. Plus, I don't think this is the end of Cody and Damian Sandow. I think we will see more of the two of them. And I do think that eventually the briefcase is going to go in play. They're making such a big deal out of how he's changed the briefcase and not just the normal, like, he's the Money in the Bank guy. Sandow handcuffs it to the ring. Something's going to happen between the two of them over that briefcase. And I think eventually Sandow doesn't get a chance to cash it in. I think Cody gets it.
Here's the thing that I will say about the briefcase. They had a 6-minute match at SummerSlam. I'm glad the briefcase wasn't involved because it would have been wasted at this point. And I think when they can have more time, look, that match may take place on Raw or SmackDown, but then it can get 2+ segments of time and can actually be entertaining and really allow those guys to shine, especially if they put it up in a ladder match or maybe they're saving it for TLC because it's far be it from them to do the same idea 2 years in a row, except lower on the card with two different guys than what they did last year. But it'd be entertaining, and it would give those guys a chance to shine and much more time because TLC, they don't usually book quite as many matches on that pay-per-view. So I'm down. I'm down with that. I'm glad they didn't do that. It's a real feud. We have a real mid-card feud that is highly entertaining and highly engaging between these two guys. And that's a rarity in the WWE.
I miss those days.
They're feuding over the company's top secondary title, the Money in the Bank briefcase. So that is...
it's the only briefcase left now because Orton already used his.
Exactly.
That's the last briefcase we got this year.
Exactly. So
it
could
be around for a while.
It could be, or, you know, they might. I don't think they're going to resolve it, like, tomorrow, per se, because I think there's plenty they can do with Del Rio and then Van Damme or whoever they want to do there. We'll see as we move forward. So we are going to put a bow on our SummerSlam coverage. I did see a couple notes and a couple things posted here and there. Is this a long-term alliance with Triple H and Orton? Is this just a way for Triple H to get what he wants? Are we seeing some new form of evolution come back? Like, what are we seeing with Triple H and Randy Orton? Patrick O'Dowd, we'll start with you.
I think it's a little premature to be like, evolution's getting back together. I think that, you know, we'll get some sort of explanation or start of an explanation tomorrow on Raw. And we'll move forward from there. I'm not ready to jump forward. I don't even know that this will be that long standing of a partnership. It could be less about Randy Orton and Triple H and more about Triple H and Daniel Bryan. So let's just wait and see.
There we go, Steve.
Indeed, that's a good point right there. And we were talking about on my show with Larry on Friday night, and I was saying, like, I would be okay with Evolution coming back if they bring back the old Evolution theme music. Which,
oh, yeah.
You know, I love the old Evolution theme song, Motorhead, Lie in the Sand. I love Triple H coming out the King of Kings tonight. I went crazy for that because they hadn't played that for him in a long time. So I was pretty excited about that. And it does seem like they're building up to the whole plan that was kind of reported by all the dirt sheets a few weeks back about Triple H turning heel and then Vince turning face and bringing back the conquering hero to take on Triple H. And, well, it'll be interesting if they go that whole route. You know, I'm not sure it'll completely work or not, but if that conquering hero feels up to it, then, you know, give it a shot. What the hell?
Hey, maybe I'm wrong about my prediction that Daniel Bryan walks into WrestleMania 30 as a world champion to face CM Punk. Maybe Daniel Bryan's that conquering hero that faces Triple H. Who knows?
It could be their
way of putting over Daniel Bryan.
I would see him being either challenging for that, or I would see him more as a challenger for the title also, would be my guess,
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
is why I would disagree with you on the going in as champion.
No, definitely. We got
either way.
Ton of time to get there. So,
Chad? It'll be fine.
Yeah, I think that the idea that we could get a Bryan versus Triple H match out of this feud is really exciting. Initially, earlier in the week, when I was sitting there putting things together, I kind of thought that leading up to Night of Champions, we'd end up getting Triple H and Orton versus Cena. And Bryan, probably for the belt, which is something I don't like seeing in tag matches, but, you know, it just kind of made sense. Now, Cena probably taking time off. Looks like we're probably clear of that one. I hope that it is an alliance team, but I don't need really an evolution. I'm going to go back towards the late 90s, and I want a corporation. I want Randy Orton to be the champion that The Rock was for Vince McMahon after Survivor Series 1990. Really what I'm hoping we get out of this. And just so everyone knows, the re-air of Total Divas is starting right now, Greg, in case you need to turn that on.
I'm good, actually. I have the NFL Network on in the background where the Cardinals game where they defeated the Cowboys is coming on. It's just preseason, so that defeat doesn't matter. But I'm going to watch a man's game of football and not Total Divas. That's all. Patrick Goddard agrees with me.
I'll check that out tomorrow.
I do agree with you.
You have a vagina!
That was for anybody out there who's tuning in to... I totally. We need some testosterone now in the show.
Greg DeMarco.
Greg Eastar.
I need you. I can't live without you. I want you right now.
There we go. That feels better.
Aw, very nice.
Put in.
Here we go. A real diva in AJ Lee. That's not that Natalia's not. Let's be honest. She can go. And by the way, the more important match for Natalia was on Access, where they had a team with a celebrity. Way to treat your celebrity, putting them on the outdoor card at Access. I'm not complaining. I don't care.
Yeah, I was like, you want to see that match?
Like, I can only figure that they pitched that like a week ago, and Maria Menounos had no time to prepare for it. So she would have gone in there, not knowing what she was doing, made a show clips later or something. I don't know. But that is a strange situation. And let's not talk about the AJ and Natalia thing on Raw, because that was just a total debacle.
No, you're exactly right. It's weird. Natalia's weird. I know people love her. To me, she's just kind of weird. That's we'll save that topic for another day. So, Patrick Goddard, before we let you go, I do want to talk about, it's on the next thing on the rundown. This weekend, Ring of Honor did present Manhattan Mayhem 5. Tons of great feedback coming out of this show, the World Title Tournament. Seems like this whole scum title being vacated, going to the World Title Tournament, is really paying dividends for Ring of Honor. And the question I want to pose, and we'll kind of go around our little roundtable format here, is ROH back? Is Ring of Honor back, or maybe there's varying degrees of back in your guys' opinion? Who knows? We'll see. Chad Perry, we'll start with you. Do you kind of feel like Ring of Honor is on the comeback trail, or has already finished the comeback trail?
I don't think anywhere near finished the comeback trail. You know, I'm definitely been a very Ring of Honor supporter for many years, but the last couple of years has been a rough patch. And right now, I still don't quite see how. I mean, they put on a great card, but I don't take one great card when you still have, you know, five before that have had their struggles, and say they're on the comeback trail. Even their TV's inconsistent. Next week they're doing a recap show. You have a freaking TV, you have a title tournament going on. You have two other shows coming up, and you're going to do a recap show. It just makes no sense. You know, the shows does look terrific, though. Young Bucks Hooligan sounds great. The tag match. Everything looks very good, but I'm just not really ready to call it a comeback yet. When we get to the Glory by Honor shows in October, if they've remained this consistent, then I'm ready to talk about them making a comeback.
Two things that I'll say real quick. First of all, All-Star Extravaganza was also a great show. So that one, and it did have its issues with the pile driver in the apron. Don't get me wrong. Second of all, when you talk about a comeback.
Come on, man.
Don't call it a comeback.
I just haven't busted that thing out in a long time. So I just felt like.
Remember Samoa Joe? Remember that guy?
Of course I remember him. He stood around while Dixie Carter was cutting her promo about Kurt Angle. And then in the back of my head, I just kind of wanted her to muscle buster Dixie Carter. Not going to lie.
I'll take your word for it.
Steve Cook not going to be part of our Impact Wrestling discussion later, apparently. Neither is Tony Acero, who's on hold right now. Ready to talk about SummerSlam. He hasn't watched TV. He tried, and it didn't work out. Patrick O'Dowd tried, too. Still does. Patrick
I was like, what are you talking about? I still watch
it. I know.
Patrick O'Dowd loves TNA Impact. He was tweeting all about on Thursday night. I saw it.
It was. Giving me shit for not watching it.
That's because you watch stupid television, man. but anyway, I'll just jump in and answer. I'll give my answer now. When I think about this ROH, is ROH back thing, oddly enough, it makes me think of Tiger Woods. And every time that Tiger Woods has, like, a decent tournament, people want it to be – want him to be back so badly because he's actually really good for golf that we're like – we pronounce them back or we say, this is going to be it. And then they show up at the PGA Tour and shoot 11 over for the tournament, or, you know, we're going to have another streaming feed. And so I'm with Chad in that, yeah, there's been a couple of good shows, but I feel like they haven't hit a stride that allows me to trust that this is going to continue forward. I mean, not that I want to take it this far, but it's almost a TNA model where we've had a bad patch. And then we'll put on one or two shows that'll just do just enough to give you the hope that this is going to be good and consistent again, or good and consistent. And then we'll give you something craptacular, or we'll do something horrible to alienate our fan base because we just can't figure out how to, you know, do streaming on in any way, shape, or form on a computer. It's like kryptonite. And so I'm not ready to declare them back. They've taken a step.
Steve?
They've taken a step towards a comeback. The thing about Ring of Honor to me, and I've heard Kevin Steen talk about this a couple times, makes a lot of sense to me. The problem with this Ring of Honor is that they get compared to Ring of Honor from 2005, 2004, 2006, back in mid-2000s when, you know, Book It Gabe was there and everybody's going crazy. They had Match of Year candidates on every single show. But this Ring of Honor company, it's really not the Ring of Honor from back in the day. I mean, you got different people running it now. You got a lot of different talent. There's still some guys like Roderick Strong that were there in the past, and guys like Einstein were there and whatnot. But really, the only thing that's in common between the Ring of Honor from back in the day and the Ring of Honor that's here now is the initials, ROH. And I think, you know, a lot of the old fans still want it to be like it was back in the day. But, you know, the new owners, they have a different goal. They're trying to reach a different audience. And the old ROH was a niche product as much as we all loved it. And it was a great time, but they're just doing different stuff. It's a different situation now in 2013. And they do have some – I've liked it better since they got rid of Scum. I was not a fan of the Scum storyline. I like Steel Cage Warfare and getting rid of these guys. And it seems like it's been picking up a little bit since then. I'm worried about this recap show with Roderick Strong and Jay Lethal, who I don't think should be talking for a whole hour, but that's neither here nor there. But they've had some good stuff. Like a couple weeks back, they had the Forever Hooligans and Red Dragon. I thought that was a fantastic piece of business. And Red Dragon, the American Wolves on this show, pretty good. So they can still bring in some good talent and have some damn good matches. So As long as they do that from time to time, I won't be too mad at them.
It's funny. I'd rather see Jay Lethal and Roderick Strong wrestling each other than talking with each other at all.
Yeah.
Let's just pick door stalkers and put them together and see how it goes. It's probably not going to go well. So, and we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I got to be honest, 100% honest. Patrick O'Dowd pretty much described why I feel the way I do about Ring of Honor being back. It's because I want them to be back. He's exactly right. Like, you nailed it on the head for how I feel about ROH. So congratulations, Patrick O'Dowd. You pretty much figured out and helped me understand why I feel the way I do. And that's kind of where I'm feeling. And I guess it's so, you know, if I take a step back from what I want to see out of Ring of Honor, then yeah, it is probably more of a they're on that comeback trail. I don't know how far along they are on the trail, but just some interesting things. I mean, I think the tournament has been great. The semifinals are surprising and not surprising. Like, I did not expect Tommaso Ciampa to be one of the semifinalists. So I'm happy for them there. Even when Bennett was in the quarterfinals, I thought Bennett would advance. I don't know if he's being punished for what happened with Whitmer, whatever. We'll probably never know. So as you know, Kevin Steen, Michael Elgin, Tommaso Ciampa, and Adam Cole, it's a heck of a set of semifinalists. The return of Homicide and the teaming with Eddie Kingston as Kevin Kelly on the Ring of Honor, kind of their own little YouTube recap, termed them Outlaw Inc. I don't know if that's what they're calling themselves or where they are. The tag team division, I know three title changes in 3 weeks is a lot, but I think that's their way of saying anything can happen at any given time in our division. It'll be interesting. And I'll be really interested to see what happens if they lose Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards. Chad, I don't know, did you end up preparing a question for Richards and Edwards and their potential departure?
I do have a question on that. I'd like to comment real fast on the tag title change, too.
Yes.
I think that storyline telling was very well done, because I feel like the end result, if the Wolves are leaving, I feel like their end result was that they wanted O'Reilly and Fish to be the team that took them out last, and taking them out for the belts makes it even better. But by having the Wolves win it from a different team, it didn't take O'Reilly and Fish. I'm totally blanking on their name because there's so many Red Dragon. But yeah, I think that was great by TNA or Ring of Honor. Wow, great by TNA.
Wow, Freudian slip.
Wow,
said by nobody ever. I'm just kidding.
Okay,
not
dude,
in the past
on,
12 months,
dude. Come on.
I just went with a typical Twitter comment. Hashtag said by nobody ever. Okay, said by nobody in the past 6 months. Okay, better.
All right. I'm just going to take Greg out and go to the game question, which is a new segment, which I'll hopefully be debuting all next for a full format next week. It's called Timeline. I'm going to throw out two things that will probably happen, and we're going to discuss which will happen first. In this case, we're going to go with the American Wolves. Which American Wolves will debut on WWE TV first? NXT does not count, so no one needs to ask that. Patrick, would you like to field that one first?
I'll
and if you want to throw out a rough date, please feel free.
Oh, jeez. Good
point. No, I know.
How about Never? Does Never work?
Whoa.
No, I'm not that mean. I actually think between the two of them, and I'm someone who I like Davey Richards and his work in the ring, but I actually think Eddie Edwards is comparable in the ring with his work rate, and I think has a better look as far as someone who could go over there and transition relatively quickly. I mean, in this day and age of more and more wrestlers from the indie scene getting the opportunity in WWE, I think both of them have the opportunity, but for some reason, I feel Eddie would be the first one. I don't think it's any time even remotely soon. Maybe a year from now that they would be with the company. And I would say a year and a half to 2 years before we would see them actually on any programming. And that would be if they were phenomenal on NXT and got fast-tracked. It just doesn't happen fast.
Mm-hmm. So you see them staying in Ring of Honor for the foreseeable future, at least for the next year.
I don't know if I see them staying in Ring of Honor for the foreseeable future. I think that I'm sorry, I missed that part. My bad. I don't know that they're, you know, if they're on their way out. I don't know what else there is for them to do in Ring of Honor. To be frank, both of them have been world champ. You know, have held the world title belts. Both of them have been multi-time tag champs. They've gone up and down the roster both as a tag team and individually. I don't know what else there is for them to do. So if they stayed, it wouldn't surprise me, but I could also see them being gone very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm. All right, what about you, Steve?
You know, I'm just kind of thinking about here, and I it's tough to figure. I don't really see them as being WWE guys, to be honest with you. I mean, I know they're changing their whole format on what exactly that entails. I would be less surprised if they went to TNA, kind of went the Austin Aries route and wound up there somehow. But if we're going to go theoretical and be WWE, I think Davey Richards is a better in-ring guy to me. I mean, he has his flaws, obviously. I mean, he's not the best seller in the role and whatnot, but they can teach him that eventually. And Richards has a strange personality sometimes, and sometimes not the most charismatic guy in the world, but sometimes... you put him on PWG commentary, he'd be freaking hilarious. So there might be something untapped there of Davey Richards where I think that he would probably end up better in Edwards in the long run. But like Patrick or Dowd, I would say it would be at least a year before he popped up on the main roster.
Yeah, I'm in actually total agreement with Steve on this one. I'm definitely on board with Davey Richards making the debut first. The reason why it is completely different... good friend of the program, guy by the name of Darren Corbin, put out some YouTube videos. And there was a YouTube video that he shot backstage, and all these different people were coming up. And in walks, and this is the exact way that his name was put on the screen, OG Davey Richards. And Davey walked in like a freaking gangster and was completely in this gangster character and was hilarious. And I think there is that untapped value to Davey Richards that just doesn't really fit in, per se, with Ring of Honor. And just he's kind of been typecast, and he's probably put a lot of it on himself with the way that he's acted and some of the things that he's done. But I do think there's some ability there that we haven't seen out of Davey Richards that causes me to think that we'll see Davey Richards on WWE television before we see Eddie Edwards on WWE television. And I'm a huge Eddie Edwards fan. I think there was some untapped potential for Eddie Edwards to go solo as a heel after he won the Ring of Honor world title based on his I Told You So promo towards Roderick Strong when he won the belt. So I think both guys have a shot. Long term, I could actually see Eddie Edwards probably being more successful, but I think Davey Richards is going to be the first one that we see on WWE television. If either even happens, I'm kind of in the never boat with Patrick O'Dowd, too, in terms of the actual time frame. And in the TNA boat with Steve, I think I would see Davey Richards showing up. Davey Richards, to me, is sort of the perfect, X Division, cash in the title shot, win the TNA world title guy.
Sure.
Maybe about 2 years from now. That's kind of what he strikes me as. Probably a better candidate for that than Chris Sabin. And not to bash on Sabin, it's just that it turned out to be a poor choice. He's closer to Aries, not at Aries level, especially in promo ability, but he's closer. He's kind of in between Aries and Sabin for me. He's more believable against a guy the size of Bully Ray than Chris Sabin was. So that's kind of where I stand on it. And I do want to point out, if you believe the internet reports, these guys haven't even tried out yet. They're going to the tryout that takes place the same weekend as PWG's Battle of Los Angeles. That's why neither guy is now in the Battle of Los Angeles. They're not gone yet. They're not under contract to Ring of Honor. They won the titles not under contract. They're obviously handling their not under contract situation better than Kenny King did with Ring of Honor. And where's Kenny King now? Watching Impact Wrestling on Thursdays, probably not with a guaranteed contract with TNA. So, in my opinion, I think that long term, this may remember when Brian Danielson and Nigel McGuinness signed with the WWE, and both signed with the WWE, and then Nigel McGuinness showed up on Impact Wrestling out of nowhere. That's what I see happening, guys. In all honesty, I think we're going to just see them pop up in TNA one day and be like, what? But I thought, and just again, once again, proving the internet wrong.
And a lot of people at that time thought Nigel kind of made the right move there, and he might have in the short term, but a lot of us didn't know exactly what was going on with Nigel at that point. We didn't know why he failed his physical study or whatever. Didn't know that.
Yeah. Health concerns not there. Nigel McGuinness might have been a world champion in TNA.
You never know.
Had Mr. Hogan not showed up, probably. As for the question, though, I am going to disagree with the group pretty much. I think Eddie Edwards is 6 feet tall. I mean, that's taller than Chris Jericho. It's taller than Daniel Bryan. You put a little bit of muscle on Eddie Edwards, and he is going to have a good build on him. On the other hand, Davey Richards is 5'8", and from many things I've heard, can have a pretty shitty backstage attitude. You go into WWE with that type of attitude, and that's not going to fly. You're going to be, you know, like The Miz, eating your chicken outside the arena when he first came in. So I don't see Richards going to WWE. I never have. I enjoy the guy's work on and off. I definitely enjoy his PWC commentary, like Cook mentioned. As far as in-ring, I really haven't seen anything new from him in about 6 years. And when you're a developing indie star, that's not a good thing. Eddie Edwards, I can definitely see becoming a solid Kofi Kingston mid-card type talent WWE in the future. I mean, I think that Eddie is still in his late 20s. I believe Davey's in his early 30s. They're just about the same age. And, you know, there's always possibility, too, that they could start working for Gabe again, and possibly the Young Bucks are opening things up, so this contract situation isn't going to be as big of a deal anymore as far as the indies go and Gabe getting his panties in a wad. Overall, though, I will say that Eddie Edwards would be on TV about a year after, you know, his contract was signed. He'd do a year of NXT and then be brought up.
You didn't disagree with everybody, though. You did, in fact, agree with the wrestling realist Patrick O'Dowd.
You did.
Oh.
Yeah.
I just rambled for so long, you forgot.
Yeah, well, I had other points, and I totally lost them because I just kept writing talk, and Greg kept making other good points and more good points.
They're all great points.
Yeah, like, for example, I was going to bring up, understand how you feel Davey Richards is a better competitor against Bully Ray than Chris Sabin. Chris Sabin is bigger than Davey Richards.
It's just a believability in what Davey Richards does, and I don't know, I look at him and I see that I think he'd be more believable. His style of offense, the way he throws his kicks, just everything he does would be more believable against a guy like, like Bully Ray than Chris Sabin. Chris Sabin is just, you know, should live and die in the X Division and stay there. And I'll bring up my Chris Sabin points here shortly anyway. And I've already written them over at the 411 Mania as well as at ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. So feel free to check those out. Not a cheap plug. That was just a plug. So wonderful. Patrick O'Dowd, anything for the people before we let you go?
Sure. We did all this talk about SummerSlam and stuff. One match that I think people need to go back and watch, because I think it was quite good and probably even better than people expected, Christian versus Alberto Del Rio. Yep. I really thought that was a terrific match that people are going to forget about because of the last two, and you shouldn't do it. It was as good as I think those two could put on.
Yeah, it was probably the best 12-minute match they could put together. Or was it 16 minutes? I don't remember the exact time. I feel like it was shorter than their match that we just saw on television. But it was still a good match, still a great match, like you said. And it is one that, unfortunately, it will be forgotten just because of the other matches.
I think on a different pay-per-view, people are talking about, you know, that one stealing the show. Like, I really do believe it was that good, and the way that they sold Christian not going down. And that was like, it was really like, they're really selling this idea that Christian's run is pretty close to done. And I really thought that if this is really his last shot at a world title match, and this is the way that it really goes, that it was well played and well done.
All right, excellent. Well, Patrick O'Dowd, next week. Next week, we'll be back to our normal time, and you should be excited, Patrick O'Dowd. We're talking to the man behind the comic, Headlocked. So it should be something you're excited to do on the show. A little something different next week on the program as we bring on the man behind the Headlock comic. So, Patrick O'Dowd, we will talk to you next week.
All right, good night, everybody.
Hey. There we go, everyone. The wrestling realist, Patrick O'Dowd.
We're beautiful, and we wrestle.
So, you know, he can go back later and listen and hear Sue Young's voice. He'll be happy with that. So, let's talk some TNA and have some fun. And I will be honest, and I guess I'm kind of glad that Patrick O'Dowd isn't here because he seems to feel the need to talk me down from the ledge. And I just want to go crazy and talk bad about TNA. I'm not going to lie. If you're here hoping for some fair and balanced commentary on TNA, I feel like it's fair and balanced, but it's also my personal opinion in where we're at. If you watch Impact Wrestling on Thursday, and I don't say that to be silly, it did go up. Their ratings did go up. Thanks to, as they do, the pay-per-view on television format has worked for TNA, and they have seen some good ratings returns, and they're continuing it with No Surrender here in a few weeks. Bully Ray did regain the TNA World Championship from Chris Sabin. And in my opinion, that was the right result. I think Sabin beating Bully Ray was the right result. And I think Bully Ray regaining it from Chris Sabin was the right result. I just think the execution was terrible. And Chad Perry, you made some comments about how Daniel Bryan's 5-minute world title reign was booked better than Chris Sabin's 28-day title reign. So kind of give us your opinion on what we just saw out of the past 4-week long Chris Sabin experiment as TNA World Champion.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was pretty bad. I think from business, I mean, I know you're saying that ratings went up, but ratings went up super marginally. Ratings didn't jump up from a 1.2 to a 2.0 or something. I'm guessing they went from like a 1.1 to a 1.3 or something. And that's really not great for business. To have the title switch hands from Bully Ray to Sabin and Sabin to Bully Ray in the course of 4 weeks, and both of them happen on free TV, it's just really stupid. I understand the concept they're going with because they backed off on their money, and that's a whole different rant. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I watch Impact religiously like I do Raw on Monday nights, but, you know, from what I've followed, it's been just illogical, and Sabin was never seen as a credible champion. Daniel Bryan was seen as a more credible champion in the 5 minutes. He really was, because people cared about him as compared to Chris Sabin, who, basically was champion for the Main Event Mafia, even though he was not a member of the Mafia. But Rampage Jackson is good enough for that. I guess that's pretty much, it was a very poorly booked title reign. It reminded me, you know, of the Rey Mysterio title reign a few years ago where he looked like a joke through the whole thing. So at least TNA cut it off sooner than that. But I think TNA is very confused about what they want to do right now with everybody.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding on that one. And some of that has to do with the fact that the guy in charge of booking is gone and a new guy's in charge of booking. So you're going to see some of those things happen. Steve Cook, what are your thoughts on the reign of Chris Sabin?
Yeah, it was a reign. It was there. It allegedly happened. It was ultimately pretty darn forgettable. I mean, I'm not exactly surprised. As much as Chris Sabin is a fine wrestler inside the squared circle and whatnot, I never saw him as being, as Hulk Hogan would say, the guy, brother. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I just never saw him as that, and it's kind of weird because he was like the little buddy to Main Event Mafia. You know, he'd like show up with them. They'd like pat him on the head, like, hey, way to go, buddy. Yeah. And then eventually Bully Ray's bound to get titled back because he is the top bad guy they have there, and theoretically somebody's going to win this Bound for Glory series, probably Magnus or May Joe or Styles or somebody else. And you want to have the heel sitting there to, you know, probably beat the guy. Is usually what they do, right? They usually have the guy get beat. You know, they go for town and they lose, right? That's usually what happens. Or then they turn
unless
heel
Jeff
later,
Hardy.
And then they win it later on. Yeah.
Unless you're Jeff Hardy.
But Jeff Hardy, where is Jeff Hardy?
He's around for Glory Series. He's there.
Is he there? You know, I can't keep track anymore. I can't keep track anymore, to be honest with you. All these Ace of Eights guys, and then I read spoilers, and there's all sorts of weird stuff going on. I guess I probably shouldn't mention anything with AJ Styles next week, right? Probably not.
This show is not spoiler-free, and I even have the spoilers in there. So AJ turning back to being full-fledged face AJ Styles, the same taping where he was emo AJ Styles, is fair game.
Yeah, they gave up on that already, which it's not like it was really getting over anyway. I know they wanted him to be the big rebel outsider, and then he starts, you know, losing matches and being just another guy. So I guess they figured they got to try something, especially with Angle being out of the picture. Maybe the old AJ Styles is the way to go, and it'll probably be better than the old one. But I did like the emo AJ's theme music, so he had that going for him at least.
That was about it. Yeah. Here's the problem with TNA and stuff like that. Like you tease the affair Angle with AJ Styles and Dixie Carter. Unless you're willing to do it, don't even do it. And then you're going to go AJ as this rebel heel Sting-like character hanging out in the rafters. Unless you're willing to go all the way, don't do it. And this TNA always goes part of the way with stuff like this and just to get us excited about it, and then they don't go all the way. And even though some of the ideas are just crazy, at some point one of them would work if they actually just went all the way with it. And they can't. They just don't. They put it in there to try to hook us in, and then they unveil whatever their idea was the whole time, and it's just not that great. At some point, AJ Styles was always going to turn back to be face AJ Styles and was always going to be, you know, probably always going to be the savior of TNA. I think they just sped it up a little bit because it wasn't working. And I think Kurt Angle's trip to rehab probably moved that process along as well. So congratulations, AJ Styles. You were booked according to Kurt Angle's drinking problem. Feel good about that.
Tito Ortiz. I want to say real quick that TNA is kind of like that girl that only goes to third base. But the problem with that is they're born on third. They think they hit a triple. You know what I'm saying?
I have a quick question for either one of you. Neither one of you going to be the best reference for this. Is the TV title still a thing? Because I have no idea who's the champion, and I don't remember ever reading it being extended lately.
Abyss, it was reported, and again, it was TNA, so nobody cared as much. When Abyss won the title at Slammiversary, as it was supposed to be, D-Von versus Joseph Park, Abyss comes out, wins the title. They then retired the title quietly after that. We didn't see Abyss anymore, which, as you know, I'm not all that upset that we haven't seen Abyss since then. I'm fine with that. In fact, I would argue that Chris Sabin's a better world champion than Abyss only because, well, it was Abyss. The TV title
won off a DQ.
No. What's that?
And Abyss won his title off a DQ. So
he did.
That was instantly failing.
I'll be honest with you. If you have to put the world title on Abyss, I'm okay with it being by DQ. I hate Abyss. In case you listeners couldn't tell, right? So there you go. But Tito Ortiz and Rampage Jackson, which is funny too, because I believe Bellator is calling it Rampage versus Tito, and I saw someone else that really wishes they were calling it Tito Jackson. But you know, whatever. Tito Ortiz and Rampage Jackson are feuding in TNA to set up their Bellator pay per view match in November. That just to me seems absurd. I just can't. And if you've listened, I've long thought that Tito Ortiz could be a professional wrestler. And after watching Thursday's Impact Wrestling, I have long been wrong. I think Tito Ortiz would be a terrible. It's just awkward. He's just awkward. He doesn't stand right. Even his celebration with Bully Ray, it reminded me of the Brock Lesnar guy. Remember when Lesnar came back and there was a guy in the crowd who kind of got a little bit of fame, like the way he celebrated with Lesnar's thing, kind of like Angry Miz Girl. That's what Tito Ortiz reminded me of, Lesnar guy.
I'd rather see Lesnar guy in TNA, be honest with you.
Well, I think there's some stuff with Lesnar guy and CM Punk that I saw where they're both doing the Lesnar pose. It's kind of funny. But Tito Ortiz is just terrible. in his experience at TNA so far. Whereas Rampage was serviceable as a non-wrestling guy cutting a promo on Impact Wrestling last week. And Ortiz was just bad. And again, the payoff isn't even going to happen in TNA. The payoff is going to happen on a Bellator pay-per-view that no one's going to watch. Like, Bellator is probably going to pull the same pay-per-view numbers that TNA pulls. Not many.
Pay-per-view?
Yes, November 2nd is Bellator's first.
Is it a free fight card?
No, it's not a free fight card. It's two guys who have combined to lose their past 10 fights in mixed martial arts. Granted, like 7 of those come from Peter Ortiz. They are fighting each other in the main event of Bellator's first pay-per-view. And the more talented fighters will probably be on the undercard. So,
I was ready to watch it because I thought it was going to be on Spike for free, but no way in hell am I paying for two washed-up fighters. That'd be like watching Hogan and Sting main event Bound for Glory. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Never mind, that happened.
Yeah. Sting did his main event Slammiversary.
And he faced Hogan a couple of years ago at Bound for Glory and the big marquee match, so.
Yeah.
Which is funny because that wasn't the main event, and once the card was over and we saw what they did to Robert Roode, I argued that it should have just been the main event because it would have been better off. This is TNA. Every time I come around, I go back around the other direction. It's awesome painful. It hurts.
Yeah, bringing in Tito and Rampage would have been good, like back in 2005.
Yeah,
it would have been good then.
To be a referee at some point. I know he's had some stints there. You know what, though? Tito Ortiz's run is probably going to be about as good as Frank Trigg's was in TNA.
Oh,
and
God,
Rampage is
awful.
Probably going to be the best MMA guy to have gone to TNA, which isn't saying much. Let's be honest. You've got King Mo. You've got Frank Trigg.
Ken
and
Shamrock is the first champion now. Come on.
But
that was 4-0-2.
I don't look at Shamrock as an MMA guy. He spent plenty of years in professional wrestling.
That he did. That's a true story, but that still goes down history.
People don't realize Ken Shamrock came up through the indies.
He did.
Yeah, Google Vince Torelli. Yeah. That's what he wrestled as. Like, this is not a guy who just turned MMA into pro wrestling or vice versa. Like, he came up through the indies, and I saw him. Like, I grew up in Richmond, Virginia, and I saw him in South Atlantic Pro Wrestling, and he was a big deal there. Like, he was one of their guys, and he was good. It's people often forget that because it was before a lot of people's time, especially Chad Perry's. But it's just kind of the way it goes. So, just talking about TNA makes me angry. And do we even have anything else left to say about TNA at this point?
I got less than nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you on all the MMA stuff. I think it's ridiculous. And that was the one part I switched over to TNA at the 9 o'clock hour. A good time to bring in viewers to see what was going on. And Rampage was talking. I thought he was awful. And as an MMA, somebody who watches MMA, I've seen Rampage cut better on scripted promos than whatever TNA scripted for him. He looked awkward out there. It didn't feel right. Yeah, it's bad, and the AJ thing is frustrating to me. So I'd like to see where the angle didn't go, and the angle could have been good, but it was booked poorly basically from the start. So, yeah,
sounds a lot like Chris Sabin's title reign to me.
Yeah.
Really does. Which just proves the point that I made when he won the title that Chris Sabin is no Austin Aries, and there's nothing wrong with that. Very few people are.
No, they're not. And as far as the MMA guys go, as far as MMA guys cutting promos and whatnot, and we know he's ripping them off from guys back in the 1970s and 1980s. But as far as the MMA promos go, and you can talk about his fighting skills as well, there's Chael Sonnen, there's everybody else, right? I mean,
yeah.
Sonnen's a stalker there, for God's sakes. That man, I mean, if he's ripping off from Billy Graham, it's fine, but the guy can cut a damn promo. He actually won a fight, so God bless him.
No, you're exactly right.
We don't know if he's clean yet, though. Let's give it time.
That's true. We haven't had the drug test results yet.
Test comes out. Got to see how the test comes out. But and I know we don't talk a ton of MMA, but man, is the time right for them to finally bring out the 195 division. I mean, you could easily, you know, Machida could make that weight. Sonnen could make that weight. Belfort could make that weight. I mean, you could so easily card out. What's that?
Vanderlei Silva. You can get down there.
Silva, Anderson Silva, for that matter. I know he's got the rematch with Weidman, but I mean, you can have it's a hell of a time for them to establish what could be that division. So that's all I'm saying is you know, and I'm sure they've thought about it. Dana White is pretty smart. He might come off as a dick, and he is a dick probably, but he's still pretty damn smart and knows what he's doing. So excellent.
Smart we are, that's for sure.
Yeah, because we're doing this, and he gets he makes a 5-minute YouTube video and gets like a billion hits. So it's really funny. He claimed that his YouTube videos draw more than Bellator shows, and then someone actually showed he pretty much does. Like, his YouTube videos, many of them have gotten more. Not all of them, but many of them have gotten more hits than Bellator has gotten viewers. It's kind of it's the parallel. I'm going to write about this. Probably this week or next week, the parallels between TNA and the WWE versus Bellator and the UFC are uncanny. It's really it's sad and true all at the same time. Like it's crazy to think just the parallels that are there. And it's so funny to see. Like I kind of look at the partnership with Bellator and TNA, and I kind of think it's cute. Is the only way I can describe it. Like they think they're accomplishing something. And we all know they're not. And they almost deserve each other, I guess. And it's sad because they're both products that I used to stand behind and think had some great potential. But this desperation for acceptance and success that meets their competition has really driven them away from the things that made them unique and fun. And you know what? I'm sorry, but I just don't think they're there. You know, they're going to be a blip on the radar in their sports history. You know, if the UFC were WWE, they would someday release a Rise and Fall of Bellator DVD.
Are you going to buy all the rights to their videos too? All the whole library?
Don't even need it.
They would thrive.
they
would thrive. That's true.
They said they're going to negotiate with Ben Askren. So, you know, if they bring him in and they've already brought in some other Bellator fighters, it might be worthwhile for them to do that someday. And it's funny, too, because UFC, the way they bought WEC, kind of like WWE and ECW. I mean, the parallels are just crazy. It really is, you know. And Vince McMahon and Dana. What's that?
Right up to the fast.
And Pride was WCW.
Yeah. Or Strikeforce. Yeah. And what was Strikeforce and all? Who knows?
You make the comparison right up to the fact that, honestly, WWE and UFC, they're almost overexposed at this point, too. I mean, UFC, I'm pretty sure they're in their streak right now of almost something like 8 shows in 8 weeks, just about. And WWE, all of their programming out there is insane.
They want to make SmackDown an hour longer, for God's sakes.
I know.
That's a great idea.
The hell are they going to put on it?
Raw recap. Recap.
More highlights of Raw.
I guess so. But I want to know exactly. I know Bellator is trying to draw pay-per-view viewers from the TNA audience, which is why they're doing the whole Rampage thing in TNA. But I want to know why they think they're going to do that when TNA can't get TNA viewers to buy TNA pay-per-views. So I think
draw your pay-per-views.
It's all Viacom, and honestly, the Viacom is the one that's doing all this. Like, I don't think that TNA really thinks it's beneficial to have Rampage.
Well, I'm sure
and
Dixie
TNA
thinks it is.
Okay, Dixie's a moron, so we all know this. So Dixie's stupid. Dixie's the guy who broke his neck and then walked out there and talked about how wonderful it was at Kurt Angle's in rehab. So, you know.
Bellator guy doesn't seem that much smarter either. That guy seems like a stupid one.
Again, you know, these are people that I thought were great for their sports and turned out to be complete and total idiots. You know, but I'm the guy who said Edge's window of opportunity closed before he ever won a world title, and then he won like 10 of them. So don't listen to me. That's what
like
I'll 2 say.
Years.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, he's the man behind the money in the bank, the first one, and it worked out well for him. Yeah, when he came, when he made his surprise return to Spirit Eric Bischoff, I was like, nope, too late. I was so wrong. That's
for a while,
yeah.
It seemed like we were right, though, because it took him a while to catch on. It wasn't until he turned heel on this one guy whose name I can't remember right now. I just kind of, he like hooked up with Lita, and they're like against this guy whose name I can't quite think of right now. But it kind of got him over. He did pretty well with that.
He did. He did do. He did do pretty
the other guy didn't.
No, the other guy didn't fare too well. He made a really funny video in Ring of Honor where he held up signs and never spoke. His best work involved not speaking or wrestling, by the way. I just want to point that out.
He found his niche finally. He just doesn't have to talk, doesn't have to wrestle, just hold up signs. It's great. It's ingenious, as a matter of fact.
He's dating Ruby's guy. We lose. Matt Hardy wins.
Well, you know. Not to argue that.
That's the topic Steve tried to avoid there, Chad.
Yeah, really. You just had to bring that up, didn't you? My goodness. We can go for another 2 hours on that. But
no, with no entertainment if it slaps you in the face.
Thank you.
Oh, goodness. Goodness. You know,
that voice
Tony,
reminds me, we need to talk about Darren Young.
We do. I was going to say, Tony's not on right now. Tony was having phone problems, so he may not be coming in. Let's talk some Darren Young. Darren Young, of course, about... On Thursday that he was gay, came out to TMZ. We'll talk about what I feel the legitimacy of that the spontaneity of that actual video here in a moment. Personally, I think it's great. The one thing that really cracks me up is all the people complaining that this story is a big deal. And this will kind of be my soapbox for this. It is a big deal. And all of you who are saying this shouldn't be a big deal, stop trying to say, hey, look at how accepting I am. No one cares how accepting you are. We care how accepting the rest of the world isn't. And we need more things like this to happen. If you consider for a moment that wrestling is like a major sport, and it's not a major sport, but these guys are just like professional athletes. Darren Young is one of two professional sport athletes who are out, and one of them isn't signed to anybody right now, and that's Jason Collins. Ever since he came out, he hasn't been able to sign with an NBA team. So Darren Young is the only... Yeah, I know, exactly. And the NFL is not there yet, and baseball is not there yet. There are plenty of gay athletes in those sports. They're just not out. Darren Young came out, and WWE is essentially leading the way in how you handle this. I wrote in this week's Wrestling 6-1, they already needed to push Darren Young and Titus O'Neil. Like, those guys were already entertaining me every time I saw them come out. I think they would have gotten pushed had it not been for the success of Team Hell No. That said, I think the time is right for potentially a face turn. I think Darren Young's going to show up on Raw tomorrow at some point, and the response is going to be amazing, especially in – I don't even know where Raw is tomorrow. In Vegas, I'm not even sure. Darren Young is going to receive the king's welcome when he shows up, and deservedly so. I've met Darren Young. Patrick O'Dowd and I picked up Darren Young from the airport when he wrestled Shane Sewell, Glamour Boy Shane, in an NWA World Title Tournament match here in Phoenix. Just very, like, polite, mild manner. He was studying criminal justice, and he said, like, after I'm done with wrestling, I want to be a police officer. Like, he didn't even think he was going to make it that far in the wrestling business. And look at him now. I couldn't be happier about the situation. I couldn't be happier about the response that he's been given. I'm sure not everybody in the WWE thinks it's wonderful, but they're putting on that face. And good for them. And they're really leading the way in how to handle it. And I think it's awesome. And I think Darren Young should be part of the Be a Star campaign. And he should be interviewed on the Today Show. And he should be doing all these things because, as a society, we're not there yet with the acceptance like we should be. And I'm glad that Darren Young is leading the way. And some people said that this is actually going to allow Darren Young to actually make millions of dollars. And if it does, good for him. He deserves it, and I hope it causes more people. And I hope maybe, you know, we're way further ahead than we were, say, 3 years ago. And hopefully in 3 years from now, we'll be even more further ahead. And we'll have 10 or 20 openly gay professional athletes who are out there. And this won't be as big of an issue. But right now it is. So, Steve, what's your opinion on the Darren Young situation?
Well, you know, Greg, I was one of those people who said, you know, to me, and maybe I'm putting myself over for being welcoming and being, you know, liberal and whatnot. To me, it's not a big deal. Because, you know, I mean, but personally to me, other people's sexuality is not my business. I don't really care. It's none of my business unless it personally affects me, which, you know, it wouldn't, obviously. But obviously there are a lot of people out there that are bothered by it. And I'm sure if you go on the Twitter machine or if you go on Facebook or whatever, you'll see a lot of other people that probably didn't have the same type of response that the WWE wrestlers did. And most people I follow had great responses because I follow good people. So I had that going for me. But, you know, I understand why it is a big deal. And obviously it's a tough thing for anybody to do. And the circumstances seem a little, you know, contrived. I think it's probably set up a little bit by somebody because it just seems all too convenient beyond SummerSlam week and whatever. But, you know, that's part of it. It's all right. No problem with that. And he got a little run out of it, and everybody seems to be cool with it, and Tyus Neal's cool with it. And I think obviously it seems to me like a lot of people knew already, because I'm sure a lot of these guys that are friends with him, they already knew all this. They knew a lot of stuff, and some people backstage probably don't like, and some people do. But, I mean, for God's sakes, Pat Patterson was Vince McMahon's right-hand man for how many years? So it's not like the wrestling industry is, completely against, you know, that sort of thing. It's just kind of part of the climate. It's part of what it is. And we'll just move on past that, and hopefully eventually we might get some laws changed and whatnot. I'd be all for making everybody equal because, you know, hell, people should be equal. And, you know, God bless Darren Young, and more power to him.
Yeah, no, and I'm not saying you're bad for feeling that it shouldn't be as big of a story, because to me, I'm in the same boat. Like, to me, it's not a big deal, except for the fact that I'm looking at what it means for society as a whole, and I do kind of feel like we're more forward-thinking and more progressive in our thinking than most, and that's a sad part, and that's what I want to see change. And Patrick O'Dowd's kind of the same way. Like, he doesn't want it to be a big story, but he understands why it needs to be a big story, as he and I have kind of talked about it. Chad, where are you at on Darren Young?
Yeah, I definitely agree with everything you guys said pretty much. I thought, you know, when I watched the video, it seemed very odd and very contrived the way that it was done. Supposedly, the TMZ reporter, I use that term loosely, asked John Cena a similar question at one point during the evening. I haven't seen that video. I've only heard about it, so I don't know how much you want to believe that. But I think it's great for Darren, and I agree that it's a shame that it's such a big story, but it's the same thing with Obama, who is a human being, being our first black president. It wasn't that he was a president, but he was our first black president 6 years ago, 7 years ago. So it's the same thing. Society is slow to accept things. You know, I saw comments on 411 and Twitter that, you know, we're less than accepting of it, you know, making jokes. And Darren Young was talking about how he overcame a speech impediment at a young age. And somebody, I'm actually not going to go with what they said, but you kind of put it together with what he came out saying and the speech impediment. And, you know, it's sad that people still think that way. Darren Young is definitely secured himself a job with WWE for a long time. I saw some people bringing back up Orlando Jordan, who is bisexual, and how he was fired from WWE. But the reason he was fired is because he was supposedly bringing a young man who was a little too young backstage with him on to travel with him. So I mean, as long as Darren Young isn't stupid, and he seems like a very intelligent young man, I think this can only be good. And, you know, WWE is going to love this. Linda McMahon, if she runs for Senate again, is going to love this. If I'm looking at this from, you know, a cynical business and political point of view, I mean, really, it's a win-win situation for everybody involved in the company and other homosexual individuals out there who, you know, might have wanted to pursue a dream with wrestling, but always felt tentative because there is no one else out in society, you know. The only thing we've ever seen is Pat Patterson, who people just may have made jokes about for years. So, and you know, kids nowadays don't know who the hell Pat Patterson even is. And if they looked him up, they'd be quite horrified, and they wouldn't want to use him as a role model. If you look back at his shit with Gerald Briscoe in, like, 2000. So, you know, like I said, overall, congratulations to Darren Young for coming out and being happy. And I'm really interested to see if it's mentioned on TV, and I hope they don't make a character out of it.
I don't think they will. I think we're past that now. I do think it'll be mentioned. In all honesty, I could totally see Darren Young coming to the ring and Michael Cole referencing the fact that he's the first openly gay wrestler in the modern era of the WWE. And they should, just like Kurt Angle was always the first Olympic gold medalist and Mark Henry's the world's strongest man. And you know, just making it, it's a part of who they are, so they mention it. But no, it shouldn't be a part of his character. And if they go character with it, it would really undo all of the good that's been done. Let's be honest. Pat Patterson's television character is a joke. And so there's no reason why he should ever be viewed as that role model. Darren Young is. I will say this about the TMZ video. There's no way in hell that wasn't staged. First of all, I've been in LAX. There's no way there's an empty baggage terminal in LAX where he has me picking up his stuff. There was probably 100 people standing behind that cameraman watching this being filmed as they did that. And he just happened to ask Darren Young that question. I mean, come on. But here's the thing. That's fine. I'm okay with the fact that they stage it. I'm okay with WWE being behind it because that means they made a choice to bring this issue to the forefront. That means that there was some intentionality behind it, and which makes it, to me, it makes it even better. So I have no problems with the fact that it was staged. The John Cena one, I've seen the John Cena video, and it was done as a follow-up to Darren Young coming out.
Okay.
So the cameraman, you know, questioning John Cena basically said, are there any openly gay wrestlers in WWE? And John Cena said no. And then he was like, well, earlier today, Darren Young came out. And John Cena, you know, he was like, oh, good for him. And he even said, like, Cena made the comment, I'm glad he finally decided to come out with it. So it basically said, yeah, Cena knew. A lot of people knew. And obviously, the fact that they all knew and we didn't shows that it wasn't a big deal because it never came out. You know, it shows two things. Number one, we don't really know anything, which we've long been proponents of on this show. And number two, it was not a huge deal to them because he'd been there for years. You know, he's been there to be for like 4 or 5 years now since he signed in development. And remember, he had a flamboyant character when he was Frederick of Hollywood in developmental. And maybe they knew he was gay. Maybe they didn't know he was gay when he had that character. Who knows? But, you know, that was not a on the stage that he's on now with the primetime players. So good for him and good for the WWE for taking a big social issue and tackling it. And you're right, he probably does have a job for many years to come, even if he's not used on the same scale as a wrestler, but would there be a star campaigns and everything else, and that's what they need. And hopefully it does pave the way and open the door for many others for years to come, because as a society, especially in professional sports, we ain't there. We're not there at all. Professional wrestling is this weird combination of homophobia and homoeroticism all together. I mean, who hasn't been told, Chad and Steve, who hasn't been told that wrestling is just oiled up guys rolling around in their underwear? Like we've all heard that before. And go from there to Darren Young's openly gay, like that's a big, huge step, and it's a wonderful step for the wrestling business and the wrestling industry. So lots of good things.
How often do people talk about wrestlers' looks, too, you know?
What's that?
That's always the thing. How often do you hear people talking about the wrestlers' looks, you know?
Of course.
People always talking about that. I mean, and if the guy doesn't look right in the tights, people, they complain, you know?
Yep.
And then once you call them on it, they get all, you know, defensive. Like, no, I don't mean that. No.
CM Punk. What was CM Punk? The skinny fat guy or fat skinny guy or something
skinny
like
fat.
That?
Yeah.
Skinny fat guy. Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, Daniel Bryan, the whole feud with Daniel Bryan was built on him being not that mold, not fitting that stereotype. You know, we've never had a dwarfish champion because we can't remember Chris Benoit or, you know, all the
Rey
things
Mysterio.
That they said about. Yeah, Rey Mysterio, I mean, who's probably coming back, you know, with Alberto Del Rio cutting a promo about being a Latin American hero at SummerSlam. Probably going to lead to the return of Rey.
Bryan and Benoit are jacked to the gills, though, so that's a little bit different.
True.
And speaking of Benoit in this discussion, being a wrestling fan, all of our friends and family know we're wrestling fans, and I feel like it's a very niche group where when wrestling's in the headlines, you get hit with the, do you know this person, do you know this person? The last time I really had a bunch of people come up to me and say, do you know this person, was the Chris Benoit incident. Obviously not a proud moment for wrestling fans. But this week I've been hit with a lot of, oh, you must know who Darren Young is. So it's great exposure for WWE, and I really think it's definitely the thing that's gotten the most mainstream since the Benoit incident, which was what, 6 years ago now, I believe. So definitely a positive.
Which does beg the question, who's coming out in TNA?
Hogan.
Hogan. Dixon's going to be backstage. Dixon's going to be backstage the next Impact thing. Any of you guys gay? I need a gay person. Anybody gay? Anybody want to be gay? Because they would be dumb enough to fake someone. Dixie would do that shit.
Well, I thought Triple H was going to try to steal Darren Young's heat, man. Triple H comes out like, well, I am also openly gay.
My marriage to Stephanie. She's a man.
Yeah, that's my beard. That's my beard. The beard is over there, man.
I don't know what's worse, Triple A coming out and seeing Dana Steele or Dixie Carter forcing someone to be gay in TNA just to keep That is good stuff. Outstanding. By the way, if you're listening live, we're about to cut off and go to the archive. We will continue to talk for a few minutes in the archive, so go back and listen here at Powerhouse Pro, or excuse me, Pro Wrestling Powerhouse, PWP Radio as well. ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com, BlogTalkRadio.com/PWP Radio. Lots of fun and a good time always. And listen on Tuesday for PWP Radio as well. And the upcoming interview with Lex Luger as they celebrate the one-year anniversary should be a big deal and lots of fun. So, but we will continue to talk. Yeah, the Darren Young thing, again, all positive. Of course, some of the fan reaction has sucked. And, yeah. And I brought up TNA and made fun of TNA. Someone commented about the John Cena-Daniel Bryan match and subsequently did with Randy Orton. And the comment I saw was, you'd never see something that well done in TNA. And I can't help but agree. You know, it's just they know what they're doing. And I just cannot help but agree 100% with that sentiment. So what I want to kind of end up with, we'll finish up here momentarily. First of all, Chad, did you have any other questions in game stuff that we can provide to the audience today? That I've maybe
I had one for TNA, but I want Patrick to be a part of it because I feel like he's the only one that's going to be apologetic towards them. So we will save it for next week.
Beautiful, beautiful. Save it for next week. I'm down with that completely. Tomorrow night or today, depending on when people are listening, the WWE is going to present the post-SummerSlam Raw. Obviously not Raw after Mania, which is probably the second biggest show of the year. You know, if Money in the Bank is the second most important title in WWE, then Raw after Mania is probably the second most important show of the year, sitting in between WrestleMania and SummerSlam. We have Randy Orton as your new WWE champion. Daniel Bryan's been screwed. What do we need to see tomorrow on Raw? Actually, I think I have some Raw music that I can play before we talk about Raw. I need my theme Raw. No, apparently I did not somehow upload that, or if I did, I lost it. So,
which Raw theme are you going with?
Old school. Old school Raw theme. Yeah, the original. It's okay, though. We'll figure that out. So, anyway, Steve Cook, what do you want to see happen tomorrow on Raw? What do you think WWE needs to accomplish? Oh, wait a minute.
Shut up!
Chris Jericho, not a big fan.
Would you shut the hell up?
I was wondering.
Shut up!
Wow. Okay, you know, it's kind of crazy. But tomorrow night on Monday Night Raw, I know we're going to see the big explanation for Triple H and for Randy Orton. Why did Triple H? And Triple H will come out and he'll talk for 20 minutes about why he did what he did. They'll bring out Randy Orton and Randy Orton will do his spiel. And they'll build up a thing of Randy Orton and Daniel Bryan. And that'll be your next feud, I figure. John Cena might be on the shelf for a while. We don't know. We'll find out for sure. And what else would I like to see? I mean, hopefully that will continue. We'll probably see something with CM Punk. I'd like to see Brock. Don't know if Brock will make it or not. We'll see a nice Paul Heyman promo run down CM Punk. And I would also like to see a Total Divas match, because why not?
Chad?
I was waiting for a soundbite on the Total Divas comment.
I don't have one. I don't.
I thought you were going to go with the vagina.
I didn't. I could have. I could have gone with the vagina. I just didn't want to.
There we go.
Okay. Too late for vagina.
No, it's never too late for.
I will say that. Eva Marie is hot. I'll say that.
I'm telling you, man. That's my
as,
new.
As hot as she is, she can't wrestle though.
Oh, who cares? I mean,
exactly.
For God's sake, she's been wrestling for a month.
Exactly.
You've been training for a month. Nobody knows how to wrestle to train for a month. Come on.
She won't make it past Total Divas unless there's a Total Divas season 2, which there likely will be.
Oh, there will. Absolutely.
I would. Yeah, for sure. So I'll go raw. Because Greg's gonna yell at me.
Hang on, before you get, I will say this, since we're on the topic of Total Divas, don't tell Patrick or Dad I said this, and I had this conversation with somebody the other day on Facebook, I don't remember who. Dixie Carter would kill to have Total Divas right now.
You can't, man.
Hold better ratings than Impact, yes.
In the ratings on E, which doesn't get huge ratings except for certain shows, which is like any other cable network. But she's probably trying to figure out a way to do Total Knockouts. Let's be honest. Like Dixie Carter's top two things on her priority list, Total Knockouts, gay wrestler. Like, she's trying to figure out how to do these things right now so she can compete because she's a moron.
Unfortunately, she already either fired Knockouts or the Knockouts got pregnant, so she's kind of in trouble there.
I know their name for ODB.
That would, she would be like the one that wasn't supposed to be entertaining on the show. That probably would be entertaining on the show. They miss
you. Ain't on the list, bro.
All right,
be on there too.
Back to you on.
Yeah, okay, so what do I want to see from Raw? I already said I want to see the slow corporation forming of Randy Orton and Triple H. I don't know if we're gonna really see that. I definitely think we're going to see an alliance between the two of them. What I'm interested to see is what Vince McMahon's role is going to be right now. Obviously, Triple H's turn, and what is Stephanie's role going to be? Because as much as I'm supposed to hate them, because I'm an internet wrestling fan, I actually enjoy the McMahons on my TV. I know that's strange. I'm interested to see where that angle is going to go. I actually would kind of like to see Punk possibly left off the card to sell the injuries. I mean, he took quite the beating. That F5 onto the chair was phenomenal. Just perfectly hit.
What?
You know, if anything, just maybe a medical update on him. Maybe them setting up something with Lesnar saying he'll only fight Punk if he can go through a certain amount of guys, and that's the storyline for Punk going forward. Obviously, Del Rio's going to be moving to a new feud, but really, that's still... And that's something I was noticing tonight, too, when I was watching pay-per-view. I still look at matches as Raw and SmackDown matches, even though we don't have brands anymore. Obviously, a lot of feuds are only focused on one show or the other, and Del Rio is still more focused on SmackDown. You know, it will likely be Mysterio, but that almost seems too obvious at this point. So, who knows? I would really like to see Christian get another shot, cause like we said earlier tonight. It was a great match. Yeah, I think that pretty much covers everything I want to see from Raw tomorrow night. I'd actually prefer to not see any Divas action because usually I don't like those matches. But
yeah, no, the Divas, AJ is entertaining. I just don't know where they go with like AJ and Caitlin and all that thing. For me, there's a couple things that I want to see. Obviously, I want to see Darren Young. I want to see the crowd's reaction. I think that'll be a moment. To be honest with you, a moment that we might never forget. Because we could actually see, if the crowd goes nuts for Darren Young, you might see the man get emotional. And when you see true emotion on WWE television, it's pretty damn good. So I want to see Darren Young show up on Raw. And I want to see, knowing the WWE, they would just let them be real, let it happen, and it would be great. So I do want to see that. From the storyline perspective, I do want to see what's next for Alberto Del Rio. It could be Christian again. It could be Rob Van Dam. It could be maybe, you know, a form of those three guys. Who knows? That could be very
Ricardo Rodriguez.
Yeah, I don't think we're ever seeing him again.
I don't know. It's just my – I've said it before on the show. I don't have any basis for it. I just think the way they wrote him out and the reasons why he was suspended for fat burners, I just don't think we're going to see him again. It's just my opinion. I have no real basis behind it. It's just my thought. I'm trying to – before I get to the main point, I want to see the battered up and bruised CM Punk who just like runs out and attacks Curtis Axel just because he's the Heyman guy. Like that's kind of what I want to see. I don't want to hear CM Punk cut a promo, none of that stuff. So I want very little of CM Punk, but the crowd would go nuts if he just like comes out of nowhere. Like we would think Punk's not there, and then all of a sudden he runs out and tries to attack Curtis Axel, and kind of like when Ziggler did during his concussion time period when he attacked Del Rio. It's the kind of thing I want to see there. I do want some explanation around the whole McMahon, Helmsley, Randy Orton thing, but you know what I really want to see out of that when all is said and done? I want to see RKO to Triple H. I don't want Orton and Triple H to be together. I almost want it to be like Orton used the scenario, because Orton's a loner to me. He's not a corporate champion. He's I want him to kind of be his own guy who benefited from the issues that are going on between the McMahons. And so to me, that's kind of the shocking. It would make him a face, because I don't want him to be a face. I want him to be a heel and all this. But let the McMahons do their thing. Let Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton do their thing kind of separately. That's what I want to see. I want to see out of nowhere RKO to Triple H just for the whole, like at the end of the show, the holy, like we spend this whole time building this partnership with Triple H, the two-man power trip, it's been done, don't want to see that. RKO to Triple H to Anna Raw would just make me a very, very happy guy. He is the apex predator, after all. That's
He also has IED.
That's right, he does. He does have IED. I also, you know, if you go back and watch the Raw promo last week, that the Shield cut, which was a pre-taped backstage promo, which means they could have edited stuff out, Dean Ambrose called himself the best in the world and really referenced CM Punk when he said it in the promo. I can't help but think there's something there. So maybe we see the beginnings of that. Who knows? But I just can't. And why would they have Dean Ambrose do that? And why would they let him do that and put it from a pre-tape promo on television unless there was some meaning behind it? And it may not start this week. He might just continue to lay the foundation for that. Who knows? I don't know. Yeah, it could be down the road. It just struck me when I saw it, and it kind of got glossed over. Phenomenal promo, by the way, by Dean Ambrose, and we'll see. But I do want to see what's next for the Shield. They were, you know, we saw Ambrose, but we didn't get the rumored tag team title match that could be added to the card. Who knows? But, yeah, it's kind of what I want to see. So wonderful. Yeah, they were out there, but not in the sense that people thought was going to happen. So, excellent. Well, that is going to do it, guys, this week. Good stuff. You know, this is a non-guest edition of the Greg DeMarco Show, which we only get on pay-per-view Sundays. And everybody brought it. Patrick O'Dowd as well brought lots of great analysis this week and what we people can come to expect from the crew here. So, good things all around. And tune in next week as we have Michael Kingston, the man behind the Headlock Comics, should be a great time as he talks about the Kickstarter campaign, which he may not even need us for that. That thing's almost fulfilled, and just a great product out there. So we'll talk more about that. So, Chad, we're going to play Timeline next week?
That is correct. The debut.
Wonderful. And Steve, we just got to figure out how to you continue to bring it every time we bring you on the show, Steve. We just got to figure out the best way to continue to have you do that in whatever way works best for you.
We'll figure something out, I'm sure. It's always a good time on the Greg DeMarco Show with you guys and Greg and Patrick and Chad Perry over there. It's a good time. I enjoy doing the Brock Lesnar thing, showing up and kicking ass, beating up CM Punk when I have to. It's a good time.
Imagine you don't get paid, you know, $5 million a match or an appearance.
Yeah, none of us do. So
my agent,
that's
Paul Heyman, is working on it.
He should be. That Heyman guy will be Steve Cook. He's got the beard going right now. So
right.
So that is quite all right. Steve, where can people find more of your stuff? Where can they find the Ocho and even the Ocho commentary?
Oh, well, we got that up on 411mania.com from time to time, and in the news section, you can check it out there. That's probably the easiest place people do it. You can go to offtheteam.com, where we have Trent Howell, the Voodoo Penguin, myself. We do some Royal Rumble commentary on previous Royal Rumbles from back in the day. and we just kind of talk about old school wrestling for an hour or so, and it's a darn good listen. We have fun doing it, just talking about old wrestling. Hopefully the people listening like it too. And I even pop up with Larry Zonka from time to time talking wrestling. We actually did a show this week, so that's pretty cool. And we have the fantasy football stuff coming up, hopefully pretty soon. Trent's got a headset issue right now, but he's going to fix that eventually. So we'll be back. Check out offteam.com for all that stuff, I would say.
Yeah, we got to get Chad Perry up on the Skype, too. We'll work on that.
Yeah,
we'll work on that for Chad Perry. So good stuff, Steve. And, of course, at Ocho Sports on Twitter, correct?
Indeed. It's a good follow. I just tweet about any damn thing I please. There's really no
reason
to it.
That's the way it should be on Twitter. It's 140 characters, whatever you can possibly get in there. So, excellent. Good stuff. Always appreciate Steve Cook coming on. Chad, at CP Goat on the Twitter. Of course, right now, I'm the only place where you can really get a lot of stuff out of Chad Perry except for the Twitter. So, that's pretty much where you get everything. So, good things there. Chad, where else can people find you? Obviously, we know the Twitter. They can friend you on Facebook. And Chad brings everything, you know, basically all comes to the Greg DeMarco show, and it's always phenomenal. I'm really looking forward to this timeline game next week. I think it's going to be fun.
I am looking forward to it as well, and I think it will be a lot of fun. I'm going to have to really sit down and come up with some very interesting things that we can timeline out.
Yep, I'm glad you waited on the TNA question, which I don't even know what it was, but I'm glad you waited for Patrick O'Dowd, because if anyone is going to be any bit apologetic towards TNA, it will be my best friend, the wrestling realist, Patrick O'Dowd. So, smart move on your part.
Thank you.
So, sounds good, Chad. We'll do it again next week.
All right, talk to you then.
All right, and that's going to really sum up this edition of the Greg DeMarco Show, our first on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse. Of course, last week's edition was streamed on the site later in the week, but this is the first one that was live. Some good activity in the snake pit. Always feel free to join us. Great time. Next Sunday night, back to our regular time of 10 p.m., Michael Kingston from the Headlock Comic Series. May also bring in a DeMarquette, talk a lot of great stuff about wrestling as well. Will definitely be a good time. If you're listening at blogtalkradio.com/Greg DeMarco, please know that that is going to be temporary through the end of the month, and then it will be only over at blogtalkradio.com/PWP Radio. So begin to make your adjustments now, and of course you can always head on over to ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. I've already contributed some good stuff there, and of course at 411 Mania, you can read the Wrestling 6-1 with myself, Antonio Cerro, and even a little Michael Ornelas. Lots of great fun every single week. And, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Greg DeMarco Show. Thank you for listening. ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com, PWP Radio, and we'll do it again next week.
Shucky, ducky, quack, quack.
Greg DeMarco
is a great lover.
Greg DeMarco, I love you.